Hold on.
Did you turn that on?
Yeah. It's on now. I haven't heard anything from them.
Huh. Okay. Hey, how are you?
Hey, it's nice you could join us.
Does anyone know how to turn it on, like it automatically?
I
think. Does anybody use the equipment to turn it on like that?
No, they have to use it.
I think they frown on that.
That's why we're having it down here. Huh. Okay. Well, we'll go with it. And we'll do roll call attendance.
Sure. Marrow.
Here.
Lyle.
Here.
Bartlett.
Yes.
Forte.
Here.
Mitchell.
Yes.
Walters.
Present.
Present.
Okay, review for conflict of interest. Presentation of the agenda. So at tonight's meeting, which is a special meeting, the item on the agenda is short-term rentals. As you can see in your packet, on October 9th, we have an excerpt where we had a public hearing and deliberation on short-term rental. That we ended up concluding with the suggestion of a special meeting on the topic of short-term rentals to discuss the proposed ordinance in more detail. So that was October 9th, and it took until January 4th to find a meeting date when literally all seven of us could be here, plus council and staff and recording secretary. So that brings us to today. So that is what is on the agenda. Everybody's good with that item on the agenda? Expecting that? Okay. Any conflict of interest with that? Nope. Hearing none. We'll go on to public comment. We'll do public comment right now on any agenda, on any topic that you'd like to speak on. If you'd like to step up to the podium, give your name and address, and offer public comment, you are more than welcome to. We will also offer a spot for public comment during after board deliberation as well, from as you can see from the agenda. Okay. If there's no public comment, we'll move on. And again, for the public, I mentioned there's coffee and water in the kitchen if you'd care for some. Okay, correspondence. You do have five letters. Four I received yesterday, and when I looked at the address line, they weren't copied to everybody else. So Sue sent those on, and I had one today that was copied to like half of the board, but not the other half of the board. So that was sent on to everybody. So you should have a letter from a Mr. Tack, Mrs. Gonzalez, Mr. Weaver. I'm not sure if that's Mr. or Mrs. Smith. And Ms. Hansen and Ms. Janice. Okay, is everyone familiar with that correspondence? Okay. All right, so we'll move on. We have with us today, we have Rick Brown, Township Planner, Leslie Couturier, Zoning Administrator, Brian Graham, Council, and We'll turn it over to Rick, who will kind of get us started with an overview of what we're looking at tonight.
Not all of them. Leave them on over. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Happy New Year to all.
Happy New Year.
The purpose of this meeting from our last discussion back in October is to sort of have a work session where we can delve into the nitty-gritty of the possible short-term rental ordinance. And so the supervisor thought it'd be nice if I could go give sort of a brief background in a PowerPoint. So I'm going to do that. Prior to doing that, I put this on each of your desks also this evening. It's sort of all the meetings that we've had along this timeline where we've talked about short-term rentals, either at the Planning Commission or at the board. We've had 6 meetings at the Planning Commission plus a joint meeting with the board. And this will be the second non-joint meeting that the board has had on it. The one correction I want to make is on the 10-9-17 meeting for the Township Board, that was a public hearing also. So three of these have been formal public hearings. The rest have been regular meetings, but we have allowed the public to discuss. So this has been discussed a great deal throughout the community with the public. So that just gives a little bit of a background there. I'm also going to try to summarize a little bit about the ordinance itself. Each of you should have a copy of PowerPoint, and I'll note the way the copy did it. You'll go page one, then page two will be upright on the back of page one when you flip it over, and so on. So that's a total of 15 pages. But I'm not going to get into super nitty-gritty, but just give sort of a general overview of some of the thoughts and what we've included. And then what we thought would be best is we go section by section through the document, finding out what areas people have concerns on, what areas need correction, what area needs elaboration, what areas just need to be removed. There may be some that don't have to change at all, like the severability clause. Most likely we're not going to have to change that because that's just about in every ordinance or the effective date. But some of the more detailed ones, like the actual regulations pertaining to short-term rentals, would be another story and probably take more time. I don't know if we'll get through all of it tonight, but I guess it depends on how many questions we have. And then Brian's kind enough to be here as well to tackle questions from a legal standpoint, Leslie from a in-the-field zoning standpoint, and then obviously we have some citizens here tonight as well. Let me go through the PowerPoint real quickly. This isn't meant to go into every detail because otherwise you would get bored silly with all the words on the screen. But the purpose, basically, the primary purpose of this ordinance is to protect the public health, safety, and welfare of residents and visitors to our community. I think that's a common purpose in almost any ordinance, but those are the primary ones. And then also to include require a licensing procedure for short-term rentals. The applicability would be that it would apply to all residential dwelling units in the township that are rented for less than 30 days at a time. Once you get beyond 30 days, it's considered a long-term rental. So if it's rented for 2 days, or if it's rented for 7 days, or 18 days, it would apply to those. We also have a series of definitions. They're contained in the ordinance that these apply specifically to situations that relate to short-term rentals. We have definitions for bedroom, license holder, the local agent, which is typically a person here in town or close to in town that might represent the property owner who might live out of town. So if somebody lives in Detroit and has a property they rent up here, they would have to have a local agent. Maximum occupancy, a definition of occupant, owner, person, premises, property, short-term rental, and violation notice. Section 4 is basically just says that a license is required. We'll get more into that when we get to that section, but it's a short paragraph that basically says if you're going to rent for less than 30 days, you have to get a license. Section 5 talks about the application for a short-term rental license, what all the information is that we need. Those items include who are the responsible parties, who is the owner, who is the local agent, and how do you contact them. There's an application form that needs to be filled out. There's an application fee, and we have included in here the initial fee. We have included potentially an annual renewal, and then reinstatement if somebody loses, you know, has their license revoked or suspended, or they possibly shut down their short-term rental for a period of time because they move away or whatever the reason is, then if they want to reestablish it, there's a reinstatement fee. And then an after-the-fact fee if somebody comes in after the fact and applies for a permit. Usually with our land use permits, that's double the normal fee amount. So if, you know, if it's $25, it'd be $50. If it's $50, it'd be $100. All those are still up for discussion. This is, you know, tonight we're trying to discuss the nitty-gritty of this document and decide what we want to leave in and what we want to take out and what we want to change, or what we want to add as well. Complete application. Basically, that's a clause that says, we will be glad to review your application, and the timeline will start for a 7-day review once it's complete. That way we don't have part of an application come in, like the fee and one form, but not three other forms or whatever they need to bring in. and then the time's clicking, ticking away, and we don't have that documentation, because we would have to deny the permit if we didn't have all the application materials that are required. So basically, it's saying, once we get a complete application, then we will initiate the 7-day review process. And that 7-day review process gives basically Leslie and I seven working days from the date that we get a complete application to a decision on the permit. Obviously, we'll review it enough ahead of then just to see if it's complete, because if it's incomplete, we have to make them aware of that. Section 6, which is short-term standards and regulations. Basically, this is a brief statement that has been included in the ordinance that says it will not supersede deed restrictions and master deeds and bylaws. So if there is a subdivision or a condominium development that has in its bylaws or its master deed or its restrictions that only single-family dwellings are allowed there, or some other similar wording, then these regulations will not supersede those. So it's trying to state very clearly and right off the bat to everybody, if you're in one of these subdivisions, this isn't going to apply to you. Also, we have information on occupancy. Basically, we are talking about allowing a maximum occupancy of 2 persons per bedroom plus 4 others. There's been talk on various numbers across the board, maximum 10 total, maximum 2 per some number based on the number of bedrooms only. We thought that this would be a good middle-of-the-road approach. Yes, there are going to be some homes that have a lot more beds than they should, and we're trying to, I don't know if prevents that is the right word, but to moderate that, because, you know, there could be concerns where, sure, we have 3 bedrooms, but they're filled with bunk beds, and you have 5 or 6 people per bedroom, and then you start to get very large numbers that overwhelm the property or overwhelm the neighbors or overwhelm the situation. Only, basically, we wanted to come up with a number so that if there is a violation, we can point to something that, okay, you have 15 people in this home. Based on your number of bedrooms and this code requirement, you're only allowed 11. So we have something to point to show that they're in violation. And we thought this was a good middle-of-the-road approach. If you do it based on number of beds, you could have a whole lot more people than the home is supposed to have by fire and building code. If you do it too restrictive, then you're not going to give somebody a chance to have a good-sized family stay at their property. But this was a middle-of-the-road approach that tried to find that happy medium somewhere in the middle. Can it be adjusted or massaged? Sure. We just need to think of the ramifications thereof. Designation of the local agent. We talked about that already. Information. It requires basically that they keep their information up to date. The property owner and or the local agent has to notify EBCT, means East Bay Charter Township, when they have a change of address, phone number, email, whatever, so that we have a way, and potentially maybe even their neighbors have a way, of getting a hold of them if there's a problem. Parking. In what is written so far, we have a requirement that all motor vehicles, including cars, motorcycles, campers, trailers, must be parked on the site and not on the street, whether it's a public or a private street. Now, I've already had one question come up from one board member, and I'll turn to Brian, we'll bring it up with Brian at some point, whether we have the jurisdiction to do that on a public road or not. But that is what is in there currently. Part of the concern has been by a number of residents in the community is you end up with large groups showing up at these homes, and they have cars parked up and down the street and blocking traffic or making it hard for emergency vehicles to get through, or they've got a boat parked along the street on a trailer, or they have a large RV or motorhome. So we're basically saying bring your toys, but they have to be on the property. So, waste, recycle, and disposal basically requires regular trash collection and prohibits use of commercial dumpsters. Now, there's more details than that in the document, and we'll get to those in a few minutes. And some of those maybe could be removed. I think, obviously, we talk in there about, you know, it has to be picked up or put out no earlier than 5 a.m. and removed. Maybe we're getting a little too, you know, nuts and bolts there or down to the nitpicking there. But I do think it's important that we have something that there's regular trash collection. The tenants aren't going to just take stuff and dump it at Grace McDonald Park dumpsters or some other park dumpster and or leave it out along the side of the road. And it has to be done on a regular basis, and it can't be used in commercial dumpsters like a hotel or something like that. Advertising, this basically requires that if they receive a license from East Bay Township, and that license number needs to be shown on all their advertising. That's a benefit to the short-term rental property owner because they can show that they're licensed to their clientele, and it's beneficial to the people that would be renting the properties. They know this property has met the standards of East Bay Township's rental ordinance, and they would be subject to that, but at the same time, they would be subject to being protected from fictitious complaints and or things like that, because we do have a penalty for fictitious or false complaints being made against rental owners. Dwelling appearance. It requires the exterior of the rental to be consistent with the neighborhood. We're not saying you can't paint your house. We're not saying you can't improve your house. But don't make it look like a Holiday Inn. Or don't make it look like something with, you know, an indoor tree house where kids can sleep. It's supposed to look like a residential neighborhood, not like a hotel district. So the appearance of the property should look like a home. It shouldn't look like a business. And that's part of the goal there. Safety, basically we require, and this was detailed to us by the fire marshal, Brian Belcher, because we talked to him about this. It requires the fire code, and they require, and this is true for hotels as well, but also they feel this should be included for these type situations, a working smoke detector in each bedroom and outside each bedroom, in the kitchen, and on the level of the house, plus one carbon monoxide detector on each floor and near the furnace or other fuel-burning appliance. So if they have a corn burner or a wood-burning stove or something like that, near those as well. There also should be clearly displayed street numbers. There should be safe egress in and out. And there should be a displayed list of emergency contact information so that those that are staying there, if there's a fire or an emergency situation, can get a hold of the necessary people in time and quickly. Outdoor lighting, basically, it requires the outdoor lighting to be downshielded, not glaring onto neighbors' properties, not glaring onto neighbors' bedrooms, not glaring onto the street, basically that it's downshielded. The courts have decided this is a commercial use. So in this particular regard, we are treating it like a commercial use because we don't want lights blazed all over the house onto neighboring properties. I'll move on from there. Well, septic and holding tanks. This has been the key issues that has been brought up by opponents and supporters alike in one manner or another. And basically what we're saying, that if you want to operate a short-term rental, you should have a properly functioning well and septic system or a properly functioning holding tank system. That properly functioning well and septic system must pass an inspection once every 3 years. So if you've had an inspection 2 years ago and you come in for an application this year, you would be okay. But you would have to get another inspection a year from now. Holding tanks would only be allowed to be used as the septic system if they had an annual cleaning and maintenance schedule provided to the township. Now, one of the concerns that has been brought up is why isn't this applied to everybody? I would be all in favor of that if it was, we did a point-of-sale inspection system. But even if you do a point-of-sale inspection system, that doesn't guarantee that it's going to be inspected every 3 years or every 5 years. Somebody could buy a property and not sell it again for 25. So, you know, I think it's important, especially since we have some issues with pollution in at least one stream in the township. We have concerns about the quality of the lakes, you know, not to say that there's any that are having problems currently, but we routinely have an issue during the summer here in Traverse City and in East Bay Township where some of the beaches sometimes have to be closed. I think it's important to try to address this issue. If we want to do a point-of-sale inspection as well, or instead, that's a great first step. But I, from my professional opinion, I don't think that's enough alone in this situation. Because if you just do point-of-sale, you're not going to know if it's being taken care of on a regular basis 5-10 years from now. Required information. Basically, this is required information that the owner and or the local agent must provide to each person staying there. The name of the license holder and the local agent for them to contact, as well as their phone number and email address. And somebody must be reachable on a 24-hour basis. Most likely, it'll probably be that local agent because they'll probably have some type of answering service. Notification of the maximum permitted occupancy. So if their house is approved for 14 people, there should be something posted saying maximum occupancy 14. Copies of the current noise and fireworks ordinance, as well as a copy of this ordinance. And then notification that the occupant may be cited for a violation if they violate any of these rules and regulations of this ordinance. A lot of them will apply to the property owner, but there are some that could still apply to, you know, if you're shooting enough fireworks or if you're violating the noise ordinance, it's going to be the occupant that hears about it too. Obviously, as is true with any property in the township, a violation of our ordinances is prohibited. That may be somewhat redundant, but, you know, pets, they must be secured on a leash on site, must be secured on site or on a leash at all times. So I know where I go in Indiana where our family has a cottage, that's not the case, and there are dogs running everywhere. And it can be annoying sometimes, especially if you have a little dog and, you know, Lassie or something bigger shows up to want to play with it, or they decide that your yard is the local dumping ground. So that is the purpose of that, plus, you know, just for safety and to prevent injuries and things like that. Taxes, all sales and or use taxes must be paid. That's state law now. But we thought we would include it in here so that it's very clear and nobody misses that, because just recently that was added. And I know Airbnb is working with the state of Michigan as well to include all that information to them on an annual basis. And then compliance with the fire and building codes. Yes, that's redundant as well, but sometimes you have to be. Section 7 is the duty to remedy violations. Basically, this describes the process for how you resolve violations that occur. We will notify the license holder and or the local agent. There is a timetable for them to respond or react. And for us to determine whether or not they receive the information to know if the clock starts ticking, we have put into the ordinance a couple of options. If they are called, it's upon them receiving the phone call, and I guess that could, I don't remember how we worded in here, that might include leaving a message. And then secondly, we will send emails, and you can do an Gmail with a return receipt requested. We'll include that, and when we see that they've read it, then we know that they have a number of hours, which is 2 is what we've put in here, to remedy or at least act upon that violation. We are not anticipating issuing violations at 2 hours and 1 minute. But we do feel it's important to have a time frame on there that they, so that the person involved realizes they can't be dragging their feet. We were all over the map on time frame. I think we started off at 2 hours. We went to 8 hours, and then the Planning Commission started thinking about that. Brian made a few good points, and he can elaborate on those if he'd like to again. And so we went back to 2 hours. 8 hours have felt, you know, well, heck, by the time they resolve it, everybody's going to be gone 8 hours later. You know, how is that addressing the issue? Where 2 hours, you can perhaps stop something as it's ongoing. There probably is no perfect time. Some will be too short, others will be too long. I don't know if there's a perfect, but you need to have something so you can fall back on if it is a clear violation that is being unresolved and being unaddressed that you can point to when you go to court, or when you can point to when you come to the township board for a violation review, saying, you know, we got the notice at 10 p.m. We sent it out right away. Here's our email train, or here's, you know, our message train. We showed that they received it at 1:05 a.m. 12 hours later, nothing was done. Yeah, so that's the purpose of that. Thinking down the road, what are we going to have to demonstrate to either the township board or to a court or whomever, whether or not the people have tried to address the concern. And as if for some reason somebody does not address them to the satisfaction of the township, then they may be suspended or their license may be revoked. There's a couple of issues related to that. First of all, if we've found that they are in violation, they will receive a written notice. Secondly, they will be given that notice at least 21 days prior to the hearing to be held. Those hearings, as we have it written currently in the code, would be held by the township board. I've had a board member ask me, why is it the township board? Well, a couple of reasons. This is a standalone ordinance. The Planning Commission does not have jurisdiction. Neither does the Zoning Board of Appeals. So that leaves the Township Board as the only entity that has jurisdiction. Now, that same board member asked me, can we set up a subcommittee or a special committee comprised of board members or others? I don't know the answer to that. Brian on that, and maybe he could answer that in a few minutes. So once the decision is made, whether it's thumbs up, thumbs down, then they're notified in writing. And the first violation, if it is found to have occurred, there is a 3-month suspension. And it was felt by many that that 3-month suspension should take place during the peak season. Because otherwise, if you're penalizing them December through March, how is that hurting them? Unless you're, you know, it might, you know, they might miss a couple of rentals during that time, but how is that hurting them? So that's the way it was addressed, although a question did come up today that there might be a bit of a loophole in that, and I'll get to that in a minute. If they violate a second time within a set period of time, I believe it's 2 years, then it's a 60-day suspension. If they violate three times within 5 years.
Rick.
Yes.
Just so that you've got 6 months, not 60 days.
That's a typo on my part. See, I checked this.
So is it 60 days or is it 6 months?
It's 60 days. Sorry. It's 3 months and 6 months. All right. I'm sorry. You're right. Where was I? Sorry. 3 months and 6 months.
It is. You're looking at existing contract. The next one, 60
right.
days.
I apologize. Yes, that's where the 60 days come from. We also allow a little bit of leeway because if somebody is found in violation, let's say in August, there's a good chance that they have existing contracts that have to let them honor them for the first 60 days. Then they'll have to deal with the suspension the following season, during the primary tourist season. The question that came up today, and then, like I said, the third one is, as if you get a third one within 5 years, then you could have your permit revoked. The question that came up today was an interesting one. Let's say somebody is found in violation late in the season in August, and the primary season is May through September. So they start serving it. There's 1 month. If we're requiring them to serve this during the primary season, then they don't serve again until May. Does that mean they can rent between September and May? And that, Mindy's shaking her head no, but you know, it doesn't say if you say yes, then the violation's not just 3 months, it's 9 months. So we might need to tweak that the wording on how we're going to address that, or come up with some guidelines on how we're going to address that. Fraudulent complaints, as I mentioned earlier, if somebody submits fraudulent complaints and we can verify that and confirm that, they may be subject to a minor civil infraction. We're trying to eliminate the, I just don't like my neighbor, so I'm going to complain about them to get rid of their short-term rental type thing. So, all right. Violations and penalties, like I said, they may be subject to a civil infraction. The zoning administrator and other appointed persons will be in charge to enforce this ordinance. Violations are considered a public nuisance, and if serious enough, the township could initiate proceedings in circuit court. Hopefully we'll never get there. Hopefully it's something we can resolve, like Leslie and I do, principally Leslie, on a day-to-day basis with other types of zoning violations or other types of violations, or we can get it resolved with a hearing with the board or some subset of the board, and never get to that point. You know, that's the last choice in this whole matter, is going to circuit court. And then lastly, just the kind of housekeeping type sections of the ordinance. If somebody transfers ownership of their property, then the new owner would need to come in and get a, you know, show that they're consistent with the license and that they've provided all the documentation and the paperwork and other required information for them to have the license going to them. Severability, that's just a standard ordinance procedure, that if any one section of the ordinance is found to be in violation by a court, it doesn't throw the whole thing out, it just applies to that one section, and then the effective date. Obviously, we will have to talk about effective date when we get to that point of when we're thinking about having it go into effect. I know we've had some talk about, you know, giving people a whole season to apply, so that they can't say, well, I didn't hear about it. They had a full year or some long time like that. So we're not dealing with people that suddenly, oh, I didn't know because it was only 30 days before, you know, I was out of town or I was ill or something like that. Giving a full season for the people who want to get that license to apply. Then from that point on, anybody from that point on would be considered, you know, coming to us newly as a new application. The other thing we'll have to talk about, and we provided in your previous packet, and it's in this one as well, are fees and what we want to charge for fees. And we provided a list that Leslie and I compiled, and they're all over the map. There's no set path on how you should go with fees. It can be anywhere from $25 to $200 to, you know, and some places have annual fees, other ones don't. So obviously that's another thing that will need to be thought about. So that's a quick and dirty summary of what we have in the ordinance, where we're at. And then I guess tonight we're looking for questions, comments, feedback, and ideas from the board, and then if the public has some after that.
Okay, thank you very much, Rick.
Yep, thank you.
I wanted to give a quick opportunity to Brian or to Leslie if they wanted to add anything. I know you're here more as a resource, but if you had any comments in particular.
Sure.
Thank you, Brian, for driving over here from
So did Ann. We're kind of watching the weather out of the corner of our eye. There's a couple of comments I want to make. It's my understanding, and based on other meetings, there was a general consensus among the board members that you wanted some type of an ordinance, and now we're getting into the nitty-gritty. I've gone through this process with other municipalities, and my experience is that you're not going to make everyone in the township happy, okay? And so as board members, you then need to make policy decisions, what you believe to be in the best interest of the community as a whole, okay? Because you're never going to say everybody's going to be happy. When you're looking at an ordinance, always keep in mind that the staff members that have the responsibility to enforce have discretion as to how you do that. For example, if you say in the ordinance that trash receptacles shall be removed by 5 p.m., okay, and I'm just throwing it as an example. If the trash receptacles are there at 5:01, technically that's a violation, okay? But understand that there's discretion. You're not going to then enforce that because you're a minute over, all right? But you need the language in the ordinance that establishes these bright line rules so that when someone abuses the action, if you will, their receptacles are constantly out until the next day or 2 days or 3 days, you have some means to take them to court. If you go on the good old boy network where you just kind of hope people do things the right way, if people abuse the process, I will have no means to take them to court to enforce the regulation. So that's the reason for the specific regulation, but I don't want to give you the idea that as soon as someone goes over the line by just a minutia, that there's going to be a violation and we're going to court. Because that's not the intent. People can't force you to do that, okay? You have discretion, and the courts recognize that. And so when you're going through the process, you have to look at language, okay? And you have to make some value judgments. This is a compromise, all right? Ultimately, you need 4 votes in order to pass this ordinance, okay? And so you may have to compromise language on point one, okay? But yet you may want to have other people compromise on point two. If we're going to get to a consensus among the board, there has to be that give and take, because you may not always agree as to what the appropriate language should be. That's part of the deliberation process and how the sausage is made. Okay? Any questions? I'm happy to answer.
Since you brought it up, I'll ask you a quick question for clarification from your example. When you talk about discretion and enforcement, you gave the extreme example of, you know, if it says 5 o'clock, and it may or may not, but if it did, and there was trash there at 5:01, then, you know, you have the discretion to decide whether to enforce that, basically. Mm-hmm. And obviously, clearly, you wouldn't be from a common sense factor. A couple people have raised the issue through documents and letters we've received over, the past 6 months, year, or whatever, that the enforcement, if you were to, is there concern over the equal enforcement of an ordinance? So, for example, you have somebody, and I'm using the extreme, again, just for illustration, somebody, the trash is there at 6 o'clock, and but there was an extenuating circumstance. You talk with them, you have it resolved. A month later, you're dealing with someone else, and they've been kind of egregious about, you know, dealing with this, and it's there at 6:30, and you enforce that. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. How legally appropriate, and the standing that you have with the differences in those enforcement?
There's never going to be absolute equality. Okay, never. The courts don't require that, and you're never going to. Okay. You have to understand that any kind of ordinance enforcement has to be governed by common sense. Okay, and so if you have a pattern that we're only enforcing the ordinance in section 3 of the township and not in other places, that could be a problem. Okay, but each circumstances have to be enforced. Look at your zoning ordinance. There are technical violations of your zoning ordinance all over, whether you know them or not. Mm-hmm. Okay, and so. No one's claiming that you need to enforce the zoning ordinance to the nth degree, and so this is no different. Any kind of an ordinance is going to be judged by common sense, okay? And as long as you're not drawing distinctions between people based on race, religion, those kinds of issues, or other suspect classifications, and if you have a policy and you act, and every time you have an ordinance violation, the objective should be to obtain voluntary compliance so you don't have to get the attorneys involved and go on to court, just like you do for your zoning ordinance violations.
So this is very similar to mm-hmm. junk ordinance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Very much.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. So, Leslie, did you have anything to add? Or
believe it or not, not yet.
Okay. So, Brian kind of preface this on the fact that when we have talked before, there's been, at least what I perceive, and please chime in, kind of a consensus that the extremes didn't seem acceptable to the township board. Allowing rentals unfettered with no regulation didn't seem appropriate, and banning rentals within East Bay Township didn't seem appropriate. So, as we've said before, everything else in between is a policy. Does that seem to be about the right temperature of this township board?
Mm-hmm. It may be too soon to make that statement, quite honestly. I think there's a lot of weeds that have been discussed in Rick's PowerPoint, and I don't know that we're supposed to be getting into the weeds. I think we need to get the overview. We need to say what this board feels is necessary and what isn't. The weeds come later, and so maybe somewhere in between, but I don't know if we can levy where that gauge is in between.
And that's what I'm asking the question for, because I'm not asking specifically on the weeds, so to speak. I'm asking, is the general outlook, you know, appropriate? Because eventually, at some point, you have to start making those choices. See what I'm saying?
I think you're asking, we don't want to say none at all, and we don't want to say unleash everything.
Correct.
And that's, I think that's where, at least I thought we were at. I thought that's where we were at, is okay. We don't want to have nothing, and we don't want to have everything. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah. Brian, did you have any input on that?
No, like I said at the beginning, we need to do something, but I was kind of for just some kind of a registration with the township and then some kind of maybe not even a fee or a nominal fee. That's kind of where I was hoping, but I don't think that's where it's going to go.
That's not voted on yet.
Pardon?
It's not voted on yet.
Andrea, Glenn, Mindy?
I've sat through many, many hours of public comment in this. This is probably the biggest issue in this township right now, and people are so extreme on the right or the left. Whatever right and left means, you know, ban it or all of it. And it was amazing to me that at the last township board meeting, it was complete. It felt like it was a completely opposite crowd mm-hmm. than had been here for hours
previous
and hours
years.
And hours of previous public comment. And it kind of opened my eyes to the fact that we went, okay, this isn't just a lakes issue. Let's open it up and let everybody have the ability, you know, under very specific guidelines to do something, and then everybody else saying no. But my concern with the no is that we're saying that the people in the lakes area are different than the people in other areas of the township. When you say that, you know, that's because, you know, for example, for a lot of the discussion, it was the Holiday Hills or the subdivisions versus the lakes area. But there's subdivisions in the lakes area, too. This is a family area as well. It's not the lakes area, which is all, you know, people having, you know, free-for-all all the time versus the subdivisions. That's not what it is. It's subdivisions versus subdivisions. So they are very much the same. And I'll tell you what, I go to the right hand, I go to the left hand, I'm not sure what to do here. And I've spent over a year listening to everybody, and I understand everybody's concerns, and I feel for everybody out there. And the only way that I think that we can do something is we've got to compromise, or it's not going to work for anybody.
You, Andrea, Glenn, don't feel you have to say anything, but any kind of opening remarks or ideas?
Ladies before gentlemen.
I think there's a lot of things in the middle that need to be discussed. I think that we've had a lot of people show up, but I also think that we've had a lot of people, probably a greater majority of individuals that are voting individuals, have honestly very little opinion. It's divided, but I started asking people in East Bay, you live in East Bay, what do you think? The overwhelming response I got from individuals that didn't come was, as long as they're not hurting me or they're not hurting them, they just want us to make a decision. That was the feedback I got.
And in all likelihood, they don't either own one or live next to one.
Right, and that was that's a very pragmatic way to put it. And some of them don't really even know if they do or not.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a subjective statement, because I think most of the people that have a real awareness of whether they are either have had negative implications or dealings, and that's maybe some of the more incited individuals that have come. There's been several short-term rentals out where I do, and they are dynamic people. But I live in the lakes area. I have not had a negative experience with any of the short-term rentals in our area. So everybody's own experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are a board sitting trying to find a unified solution to individual problems.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're facing.
Glenn?
I think we definitely need a short-term rental ordinance. After listening at the last meeting, there was quite a few out of one neighborhood that came that were definitely against it. I've made the comment before that, number one, rather than jumping in township-wide, I'd like to see us start where the problem originated, and that was around the lakes. The lakes in the 60-odd years I've been around here, I think have always been rented, maybe not as much as it you see now because they didn't have computers and what have you. I would like to see us, number one, we got to have the ordinance. There's some tweaks I think we can make in it. I think it's very good, other than a couple things I saw in there. But I'm not really in favor, especially after listening to the people that were here the last time, I'm not in favor of just opening it up to the township-wide. I think we need to kind of take it easy, open up an area, and we can always go back and expand it. But I can see a lot of people are probably going to have some issues with it, especially when Short-term rentals, I mean, it's been said before, people that come up here to vacation are up here to party, a lot of them. That's where the issues are. The lack of respect for the neighboring property. And that's where we run into it. Yeah, as far as having an ordinance, I think we definitely need one. As far as township-wide, I think just from some of the comments that we got, I don't think we're ready for that.
Okay. Real quick, Brian, before Sue, you didn't get a chance to give your personal opinions earlier.
Thank you. I guess Brian and I are very similar in our thought process. He voiced it very well. Yes, there needs to be a registration. But I really, when I listened to the response within 2 hours, we have two people that work 40 hours a week and Monday through Thursday. The issues are not necessarily going to happen Monday through Thursday. Or so, are they going to have to sit by their phones and monitor those and respond at 1 a.m. in the morning on a Saturday? It's not realistic. And the people we're hearing from are the ones that are having the issues. That's where a police power, or the police have to be involved. We've got a noise ordinance, we have a junk ordinance, we have a fireworks ordinance. We have all of those things that are supposed to take care of those problems that we're probably going to get calls on if we enforce it to that 10th degree. So a very general, simple registration, very nominal fee that when ownership changes, managers change, that information gets updated. The rest of it, the weeds, we don't have the manpower, nor do I think we are supposed to be seated here to micromanage the township. That I really, yes, I know there are some people that will say that there are problems. Those are the ones that are having the problems already. They need to make those phone calls to the police. They need to make those calls when people are available. If maybe we need to spend more of our money getting more CPOs. That, to me, would be a more worthwhile way to spend our tax dollars. To put 10 more people in the zoning office that are round the clock 24/7 to handle these issues? No. I don't think the fee needs to be exorbitant. I don't feel that we need to go through a bunch of hoops. I think simple is better. And let us legally find a way for these folks that are already doing a good job with their short-term rentals to continue. The ones that are not doing a good job, they're going to weed themselves out. It's going to, if people use those right paths. I don't believe the township board is here to correct all of those problems. That's why we have law enforcement.
Hey, Brian, you had a comment.
regarding Lyle's comments about limiting the applicability of the ordinance to a specific area, this is a licensing ordinance, okay, and not a zoning ordinance. And so it is not legal under a licensing ordinance to limit that area or the applicability of this ordinance to a specific geographic area. If you want to limit the regulations to a specific geographic area, then you must do so through the zoning ordinance. However, if you do it through the zoning ordinance, then all of the short-term rentals that are lawfully established at the time that amendment went into effect would be grandfathered. And that was the reason that we went the licensing ordinance as opposed to a zoning ordinance amendment. So I respectfully, Glenn, it's legally not possible to do what you want to do.
With this type of ordinance,
correct.
Go ahead, Mindy.
Brian, I thought that there were no legally established short-term rentals in East Bay Township right now. All of them are against zoning.
It's a function of when they establish. If someone established something before zoning went into effect, okay, then clearly they would be a non-conforming use. It's a function of how much time and resources do you want to spend litigating whether someone was a lawful non-conforming use or not. And I think the purpose of the licensing ordinance, it took that whole issue off the table.
Right, right. I agree with that. I just thought that there were no legal.
If they were established prior to your first zoning, if they were done, if your zoning ordinance was enacted, the first zoning in 1970, and someone can establish that they put it together in 65, then clearly they are.
Troublemaker. One other issue that was part of the rationale for the licensing ordinance versus zoning, aside from the nonconforming status initially, was that every time you updated it, you would have another set of rules that applied to another set of properties. So if you, let's say you established it today in the Lakes area, they'd have one set of rules. Then you decide to establish it somewhere else, they'd have a different set of nonconformity versus conformity. Then you decide to make an amendment to the Lakes area, you'd have those that apply, that were applicable under the original ordinance, and then you'd have another set that was applicable under the new ordinance. And that was an administrative nightmare waiting to happen. So that was our
big. We just would never change it.
Yeah.
Simple.
Yeah. We always write the first the first document is always perfect.
Okay, well, you know, one of the things that I think is important to note is, and I know you were providing this for us, but I'm glad you did, was the discussions, the hearings, and the public input through the Planning Commission. So they've had a joint meeting with the Township Board. They have heard from, as Mindy mentioned, all various sides or facets of the argument. And basically, this is the document that they have forwarded to us as their collective work and on short-term rentals. Dare I ask, did you have pretty good support across the Planning Commission for this? Do you recall?
Yeah. I mean, because it
changed their mind partway through.
Well, I will say that this is very much a compromise. It is very much a compromise because, you know, like I said, there's the left and the right, and there's people that are on both sides. You know, there was a lady that came in that does not want short-term rentals in the Lakes area, but she owns the Cortage School rental?
Yeah.
And she, you know, so she was on both sides of it. So people themselves are mixed in what they did. And because of right now, you know, I saw an advertisement, I think I forwarded it to others, on a real estate ad that said East Bay Township allows short-term rentals. And it was in, you know, the Indian Lakes area, is that the right?
Indian Trails
area.
Pine Grove.
Yeah.
There is an Indian Lakes, but they're two separate sections.
It was Indian Trail subdivision, and it was like, wait a second, you know? And so it's out there that East Bay Township allows it when, in fact, our zoning ordinance, for those that are not in place prior to the zoning ordinance being enacted, it's not allowed. And so we've tried hard to make it so that those that are doing a great job right now, and they're out there, they're doing an excellent job, can continue to do that. Those that have their family cottages and their family can only use it once or twice a summer can rent it out the rest of the time. But it's those bad apples that are out there that are making it so it's a miserable experience for some. And that's what this is trying to do. And the reason we got to this permitting process, again, with those reasons we talked about, is the fact that the good can continue, the bad apples get weeded out, and we can keep going. Because right now, even if we don't do anything, the bad apples are going to continue. If we just have a registration process, we don't have any mechanism to stop them from continuing to rent. They're obviously not the ones that that are necessarily the good apples, if you will. You know, so this is really a very long negotiated compromise with a lot of people and lots of public comment. And I will tell you that, you know, there are people that say, you know what, your ordinance, they don't like the septic thing. They think that should be against on everyone. And I agree, but we don't have that ability. We have that ability here. It's a stepping stone to get to where we need to be. But I think a lot of people came around and said, you know what, you are compromising. We understand that there are both sides of this, and this should shake out those that are doing good and those that are doing poorly. And I agree that the 2 o'clock in the morning phone call and the email, I don't know who's going to take that. I thought that was the co-op that we had put in the budget.
I do believe they said that was the board representative to the Planning Commission.
Yeah. I resign.
Supervisor.
So, you know, I think that, yeah, I just really want to say that we thought long and hard on this, and there were a lot of people on the Planning Commission that were like, leave it is, it's fine. And then there's others that were like, I live in the lakes, I don't want anybody near me. And there were people that said, you know what, I live in a subdivision on the lakes. My street is 10 houses long. I used to live in a neighborhood. Now I live in short-term rentals. You know, we got to do something. You got to help me. There's got to be some way that I can have a neighborhood again. And that's what we're trying to, because, you know, if there weren't short-term rentals, would my family be able to go out on the lakes and have a vacation? No. I can't afford to have a rental. So I see that. I want my family. I want your family. I want everybody to be able to do it. We just need to be able to do it in a way that the bad apples understand that there's consequences for your actions. And we don't have, and I've also had people come to me, and I know I feel like I'm on a soapbox and everybody staring at me, but, you know, I've had people come to me and say, you know, I don't want short-term rentals next to me that are child abusers. And that's where the 7 days came in, because they have to register where they're going if they're going more than 7 days or something. This is what people are coming to me with. Don't look at me like I'm crazy. This is a phone call a lady had screaming at me. And the concerns about the CPOs. The neighbors of the bad apples don't feel that they should have to call the police every day, every week, every month, every other weekend to call the police to get this issue taken care of, because the township can't say, you're done. Nobody can say, you're done. It just keeps going and going and going. So that's a lot of why we got to where we are.
The other part of that is then, who pays for those CPOs? Well, then those are our residents paying for the CPOs when the call is being necessitated by the visitors.
Exactly.
My opinion, because I kind of skipped over myself, is I've been really impressed with the process and the Planning Commission's ability to stick with this, to get input from all different sides. This, to me, is a process where you have had the Planning Commission really try to gain insight and feedback, utilize the resources of the Office of the Planning and Zoning and our legal counsel to try to develop something with compromise in mind, because there's no
good place.
There's no magic bullet with this. With respect to, from my perspective, with respect to people who own or operate short-term rentals, whether they own a couple or whether it's their family's home and heritage, this allows them to continue doing that. However, it holds them accountable. At the same time, those people who are living near short-term rentals, and thankfully most of them don't have issues, but for the few that do, this gives us the ability to deal with those, to effectively deal with them, in that, again, like we mentioned, this is a lot like the junk ordinance, where people can say, we don't want to have a junk ordinance. You can't tell me what I'm doing on my parcel. But to the extent that we have egregious, you know, use and junk and so forth, there is a vested community health interest in being able to deal with those. And, you know, I think, I don't know if it was Rick or Brian made the point of the goal is always to have compliance and reasonable ways of dealing with issues between the township and the resident, between resident and resident, because a lot of what we do is negotiate between neighbors. So I think that this does a long way in that. I, too, was struck by the last meeting when we had a lot of public opinion that wanted us to just not allow short-term rentals in the township. And while I understand and hear that viewpoint, I know that that's just a portion of the viewpoint. We have also had meetings where it's been the opposite or heard feedback, or the Planning Commission has where it's the opposite. But in the fact that there are having those troubles, how do we deal with that? It is better to have an ordinance. It gives us the tools to deal with that. Right now, the tools are not as effective. At this point, how do you guys want to proceed? What are you thinking? Go ahead, Rick.
I was thinking that we would take it section by section. Whether we get all of them done tonight or not depends on how many issues people
sure.
have.
I think
I don't know any other way to do it unless somebody wants to propose complete changes, taking complete sections out of it and then coming back with something shorter and sweeter. But otherwise, I would say, you know, we start with Section 1, and we say, is everybody okay with that wording? And then we go on to Section 2, and then each definition. And
sure. You know. Okay. Brian, did you have to come in as well?
I'm not sure whether the board members have taken the time to review in detail the language that's before you. Okay? If you have, then Rick's suggestion is perfectly legitimate. If you have not, what I might suggest as an alternative is to set a new special meeting relatively soon and have each member bring an outline section by section as to what changes, if any, you would like to see. And if each individual board member then jots down notes of potential changes to that particular section, you can then discuss. You'll be prepared to discuss that based on some reflection, as opposed to doing it off the top of your head at this meeting. So it's a function of how prepared you feel you are to proceed.
Okay, thank you, Brian. I would say in response to all of the work that the Planning Commission has put into this, all the times we've met and discussed it, I feel like, and this is just my interpretation, that this board is well-versed in this ordinance and that we could start taking a look at it. We all finally are here at the same meeting, and so we don't have to reach or take any action this evening. We can leave that for other board meetings, but it would shorten that amount of time we would be looking at things in the future. Is that, Glenn, go ahead.
I guess my thought was, you know, I got three, four things here that I would like to see tweaked, and I'm sure everybody's read it, but to go through the whole thing line by line, it's crazy. They did a good job on it. I don't want to sit through a meeting and pick through it. I mean, there's things that hopefully everybody's read it, they've had it. I went through and made a couple notes, and if everybody's done that, we should be able to cover it tonight and be done with it.
Okay, any other comments? I would say that's a good point. I have, you know, looked through it as well and made notes, but instead of you going through three things and we're going through those, let's quickly go through it. But there are not many sections on this thing. It's not.
I would just make a recommendation that we do a be done by time due to the weather and the distance that some of those in attendance have to travel. We started this meeting at 5:30. I would say that we end by 8.
I think we'll take a look at it and see where we're at 8 o'clock and see where we're at. So, okay. Why don't you go ahead, Rick?
All right. The first section, section one, is the purpose. And basically, this, as I noted before, this describes the purpose of the ordinance. And I don't know if anybody has concerns over that. It basically is saying that, you know, this is here to protect the health, public health, safety, and welfare, and require licensing. Now, I guess if some are prefer just to have some type of other...
I think are we all good with
minimum registration? Then
with the purpose.
Yeah. If everybody's good with the purpose, we can move on.
Yep.
Is it? Rick is just asking. Section one. Does anybody desire any changes?
Mm-hmm.
None. Section two.
All right.
Exactly.
All right. Section two is applicability. Does anybody have any concerns or changes there?
I have a question.
Okay.
It's not a concern or a change, but is the definition of the bedroom the same as that you would find in the building code or similar?
I don't recall at this moment whether I checked it against the county building code. We couldn't do that. I don't remember. I did check it against our ordinance, but I don't recall if we have a definition of bedroom in there. I don't think we do.
We are.
Mm-hmm. All right. On to section three.
I think we're good with definitions are just definitions. If we need to come back and add any, we certainly can as we're moving through the rest of the sections.
Okay. Section four just says a license is required if you're going to rent out for less than 30 days.
That's an important section from a legal perspective because if they don't, it gives the general rule you have to. You cannot rent unless you have a license. So if they're renting without the license, that's the section that I will cite for the violation.
Okay.
That's important from a legal perspective.
Okay. So now we get into the little meat and potatoes part, I think.
Yeah, I go subsection by subsection.
Right. All right. So starting with section five, responsibility. Does anybody have any concern with subsection 5A, responsibility?
I would just ask, why do you have the last line of that? Application form shall be prepared by the planning office. I mean,
it's probably
you just need the application. I don't know that I was. That may be a little picky, but I'm just like.
I don't care if we take it out. I mean, it is. You know, they're going to have to do a. We do talk about application form in the very.
Right. I mean, you need an application, but I don't know. I mean,
you know what? I think that's a good point, although I would say sometimes we've had applications or forms that have been board approved or not board approved. I think this kind of sets it clear that they would have the application form and update it. And I think that makes a lot of sense based okay. on they're going to be getting the feedback on what works or doesn't work.
It also provides some consistency from application to application.
Yep.
All right. B, application form. This basically requires an application to be submitted and it be certified as being true by the applicant or their agent. Does anybody have any concerns with that?
Again, I'm just like the last half, the second sentence there says, you know, specific short-term rental application form and other information. I mean, if you don't have that, you're not going to have the application completed. I mean, you talked about that, so I didn't know if that was just redundant.
I don't think, from a legal perspective, I don't think that is redundant. That's
okay.
Important to have.
Okay.
Okay. On to C, application fee. Basically, this is a fee will be required. We haven't set what that fee will be. There will also be an after-the-fact fee if somebody comes in after the fact, after having opened their facility. That is consistent with what we have in our current fee regulations. Does anybody have concerns with that section? Okay. All right. On to D, complete application. This basically says that the application has to be complete before we'll do a formal review of it. We will let them know if there's anything missing that they need to get to us. Does anybody have any?
Can I just ask for clarification?
Mm-hmm.
Are they able to leave partial applications with you, or must they turn in a full packet? If something comes in and it's not full, are they taking the whole packet back? To me, that makes more sense, because otherwise you're keeping files of partial documentation. That's going to take up an awful lot of time.
That's the way I would prefer it, because otherwise you get it piecemeal. And
we do that with land use permits. I give it back.
Okay. And so it will be consistent.
Yes.
So do we need to change the language from that last sentence from may be denied to will be denied?
From shall be to will be?
To
right
maybe.
Now it says may, means could be, but maybe not.
You could say shall then. Shall be deemed incomplete and shall be denied on that basis.
Okay.
So if they turn it in, they leave it, and it's found to be incomplete, it's an automatic denial.
Okay.
Or you could say, I could have language to this effect, that the zoning staff could review the application, determine what information is missing, and provide the applicant notice of what the deficiencies are, give them 30 days to basically do a supplement to fill in that missing material before it's denied for being incomplete. That's an option. I've got that language on my computer.
I think that sounds pretty good, because the shall be denied gives them no latitude.
Well,
if, for example, one thing is that is very minute or doesn't apply to that rental for whatever reason, is missing it. It really ties their hands on that one.
And also, they may not know what information is missing. You know, so it's important that you give them the idea. They may want to be cooperative. So, you know, you have to help them and let them know what information is missing. They can then provide it. It can then be a complete application and can be processed.
So do we want to have Brian provide me that language and we can bring it to... Okay. I see nodding heads there. You're not asleep, right?
No. So going on to the license, I did have a question with if the 7 days after you have a completed application, if that is sufficient.
If it's a complete application, I feel it's sufficient. Mm-hmm. It's 7 working days.
Seven business days,
yeah. So
right now you have.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Sue.
I just wanted clarification of business days. Right now, business day here is Monday through Thursday. But business days for the general community may be Monday through Saturday.
So you could put 7 township business days?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right. Hold on. I'm just writing it down. All right. Go on to section 6. All right. Does anybody have any concerns about the introductory paragraph before we get down to the subsections? It's basically just saying these are the...
I just didn't like the use of unique difficult presented. Unique difficulties presented.
Oh, right.
I just thought it's the first line.
Mm-hmm.
It puts a negative slant on it, and that's... I mean, it's been a long process, but they're just what they are.
Well, we just take that first part
out.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry.
I just thought that was pretty negative.
Yeah.
Of course, basically start the sentence with the word the following.
Yeah.
Bring it up.
Thank you.
Intro. Revise. All right. So, subsection A, deed restrictions and bylaws. Does anybody have a concern that we have the wording there, Mindy?
This is my biggest problem with this whole thing we did, is who's going to enforce when it says in a deed restriction or master deed. Is it going to come on us, or is it going to come on somebody else? And that's my biggest problem with this
whole
thing.
I don't think we have any jurisdiction over that.
But we're saying we're not going to permit somebody if they have that. Then who's going to determine whether they have that or not? Because there's a fight right now in Holly Hills whether there's a deed restriction or not. Some say there is, some say there isn't.
It's going to be up to the applicant, if they're part of a subdivision, to provide a copy of those deed restrictions, okay? And then zoning staff will then review those deed restrictions and determine whether those deed restrictions contain a provision that limits the uses to a single-family dwelling. And so I see that as no different than any other kind of requirement. They're going to be required to provide information to zoning staff, okay, that would then be able to determine whether they meet that standard.
If I'm reading, Mindy's concern, right? Part of her concern is, let's say staff says, subdivision regulations only allow single-family homes, and the person wants to contest that. So do they then contest the township's decision, and the township has to defend it, or is it the subdivision that has to defend it?
What would happen is that if staff reviews the master deed or the deed restrictions and determines that there is a deed restriction that would preclude the issuance of a short-term rental, and let's assume that the property owner disagrees with what zoning staff has concluded, that's exactly the reason why you have an appeal procedure in this ordinance. That issue would then be administratively appealed to whatever body, township board or whatever, who would then decide, was zoning staff correct in its interpretation of that? And then ultimately, if the board rules in favor of the applicant, then the property owner would have the right to take that matter to circuit court on an appeal, just like they can for a zoning decision.
But that's if a denied applicant has an issue.
Yep.
What if the applicant gets the short-term rental permit, yep, and then you have a neighbor who disagrees with it?
And then they still have the right to appeal that decision one way or the other.
The neighbor,
yep,
could.
Sure, absolutely.
And fall back on the subdivision itself with the restrictions, and they have to hire their own.
Well, they can. If they have the legal right to enforce their own deed restrictions if they want to. They can hire their own attorneys or whatever. But because of concerns that were expressed about deed restrictions and whether you're going to issue a permit, it was my understanding you wanted this provision in the ordinance so that a township permit is not going to be inconsistent with a perceived restriction of the subdivision. If you allow that, okay, or if you take that subsection out, then you're under no. Then you're basically in the same position that you are in zoning, because you could have a zoning setback that says 5 feet from a property line. If the association bylaws or restrictions say you have to build 10 feet from the property owner, a zoning permit's going to be based on the 5 foot zoning setback. It would be up to the property owners association to in fact enforce its deed restrictions of 10 feet if they want to. It's a lot simpler for staff if subsection A was removed, but that's not what I understood to be the desires of the board. You wanted to be sure that you were protecting those subdivisions that have deed restrictions or master deeds that do not allow for these kinds of short-term rentals. But again, that's a policy choice. They have their own legal mechanisms to enforce those regulations if they want to. That's up to the board.
I don't think that's our fight.
They need to fight their own battle, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what we're here to do. I think that's their fight. I agree.
So so an applicant, under what's currently here, an applicant would have to provide the deed for the property.
Or the master deed or whatever deed restrictions are out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Or the association laws and bylaws.
Beth, if you don't mind. Yes. Back during the PowerPoint, Rick was going to defer a question to Brian regarding the appeal committee, I think. Is that where...
We're not there yet. Let's
okay.
Hold up on that.
Okay. Thank you. I just didn't want us to not get to that.
Oh, I've made a mental note of that. Okay.
Thank you.
And so they have if I remember correctly, there was a lot of activity with respect to subdivisions. Mm-hmm. And I think it was subdivisions. There were some subdivisions that were more active than others, but I think that the argument is applicable to all subdivisions anywhere located in the township. And it seemed to me like I remember this being something that the Planning Commission looked at, that
so you mean a platted
again,
subdivision? A platted subdivision?
Right, well, platted or...
Not all platted subdivisions, not all platted subdivisions have deed restrictions.
It correct. But they would have to provide that to show that it's not...
Right.
That they are allowed, that it's not limited.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think I think that makes a lot of sense, and it has it has a lot of homeowners in subdivisions much more comfortable that we're not having short-term rentals in traditional, for the most part, where we can. Yeah.
The policy decision that has to be made is whether the board wants staff and the township fighting the fight in subdivisions or the subdivision property owners association fighting the fight.
But this is pretty easy. If it doesn't allow it,
well,
then you just don't issue it.
That's true, but I don't think, if you look at deed restrictions and things like that, it'll say this subdivision was intended for single-family dwellings or something to that effect. My interpretation of that may be wholly different than somebody wanting to put a short-term rental in their home. And if they don't like my or Leslie's interpretation, then I could very well see them challenging us and saying, oh, I want to appeal that to the board and have the board to determine whether this is what it was really allowed. And then if they don't like that, they go on to circuit court or whatever process there is. Otherwise, if the township stays out of that issue, it's up to the subdivision or the condominium in condominium cases to say, you know, to defend its deed restrictions or bylaws to say that they can't be there. So it's whether we want to take that fight up for them or.
But we would potentially then allow a permit or a license in an area where it specifically says in a deed.
It's no different than my setback example. You have an issue of zoning permit based on a 5-foot setback, even though the deed restrictions say you have to have a 10-foot setback. We're gonna issue the zoning permit based on our zoning regulations, not based on
the association.
Right. Often those are more restrictive than our zoning.
Yeah.
And so then it's up to the association or the property owner to enforce the deed restriction. So this is no different. I just thought the board wanted to make this a special protection, if you will. But from the township's perspective, from the staff's perspective, it'd be much easier to administer this ordinance if A was gone.
Now we do go back to bylaws and so forth on some things, don't we?
Well, as a courtesy to the associations that have homeowners associations and bylaws, we will wait to issue a permit until they have reviewed it and approved it and send me a letter. And that happens a lot. But a lot of subdivisions don't have associations or anything like that. So,
and some of them that did have gone defunct.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, and that's what I'm a little less concerned about neighborhoods that have associations, because when they have active associations, it's a little bit easier to, you know, if you have a single-family home, traditional, you know, subdivision, and you have a short-term rental go in there under 30 days commercial use, then and you have an active homeowners association, you have some ability to kind of tackle that. But I get more concerned, and I think this is probably more often the case, neighborhoods who don't have that association. Then it's really left up to the single-impacted homeowner to take on that, which can be quite an uphill battle.
It's a question of whether the township wants to assume that responsibility or whether you want to allow that responsibility to be done by the property owners, either individually or through the association.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, I would prefer it not be the township, because I think where it's going to be is those that have the association's bylaws and are active, and why would we foot the bill to fight it when it's really their issue?
Well, but we're not fighting it, we're just...
Well, we are if it's contested.
Defending that determination.
Mm-hmm. Because it's in our...
Let's be realistic. If you have a property owners association that is active, they're more likely to take up the gauntlet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you have deed restrictions that are out there that are not associated with an association, then do most people enforce those? Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Right. So if they have a deed restriction that says, I think, what's the terminology in here? The single-family residential use or single-family dwelling, just that in the deed restriction would be what they would deny on.
That's what staff, under this provision, that's what staff, and then you're off to an interpretation or a challenge as to what is the meaning of the language of the deed restriction. And did staff properly interpret that language? Okay.
And how would there be any other interpretation? Do you see what I'm saying?
Courts go through that. There's whole cases on how you interpret deed restrictions. And so it's not necessarily black and white.
For me, that would say the building looks like a single-family dwelling. That's what I'm thinking a deed is referring to. They don't want a fourplex or a, some monstrosity in a single-family dwelling unit.
You're not going to be able to determine tonight. There are a multitude of languages in deed restrictions and master deeds, okay? And so we need to get away from looking at the specific language. We need to then decide as a policy what's going to be the role of the township. Does the township want to assume the responsibility to look at those deed restrictions, or do you want that to be done by the association or property owners? That's the fundamental decision. You're not going to be able to parse various languages because they're all over the board.
To me, that makes sense, that if they're all over the board, we'd be spending time chasing through all those foxholes that needs to be gone.
So how did this end up coming through the Planning Commission?
Because we were receiving lots of concern from subdivisions, and we were...
Which one?
I wouldn't say it was just one, but primarily up in the Holiday Hills area, but not just them.
But let me tell you this, there's a lawsuit going on up there because the interpretation of a property owner was that the deed restriction allowed for, under a single family use, a short-term rental, where this one section doesn't have an association and they're going after them. They're going after, so you've got a lawsuit between property owners in that section of the subdivision. And that's my, and like I said before, that's my biggest concern here, because I don't think this is the township's responsibility. In any, I think it's, if you've got a strong condo association that needs to change their bylaws now, but with this coming up, maybe that's what they need to do instead of, relying on a definition that is subject to interpretation. There's a couple lawsuits going on out right now in Holiday Hills.
Why do we want to get in the mix of it?
I'm saying I don't believe that we need want to. That's what I'm concerned about.
I'm just saying if we get into this, feasibly that could happen all the time, because my understanding of communicating with people in Holiday Hills, there's 5 different subdivisions, all different deed restrictions. So if your neighbor is in that subdivision, you've got an instant clash.
Well, it's the same way in Crystal Ridge. We've had things up there on different topics, but the same thing. Cherry Ridge, sorry. Okay. Crystal Ridge is over there. Yeah. Cherry Ridge, because there are 3 different parts
each
to that.
Each phase had their own.
Yeah, each phase had their own, and one doesn't have any association bylaws and restrictions, and the other two do. So.
Glenn.
Okay, I don't think the township wants to get in where they're fighting battles. Let the associations and non-associations, if it's between them, let them handle it, not the township be the financial burden to try to fight this stuff.
Okay. Well, if we take something like that out, and any changes that we have here, I would like to have the Planning Commission, take a look at those things as well. Are we looking at,
Why do we need to?
Because it's a police power.
It's in our court.
But it's in our court. we have to adopt it or not. They do those details and those weeds on our behalf so that it is all taken care of and vetted before it gets to us. It's to us. We need to make that decision.
Although I do think Mindy will take it back, and if, I mean, I'm sure if they have some overwhelming reason why it should be different, sure, we would listen to it.
Well, it just as you were saying that this was a kind of a cumulative compromise, mm-hmm, is we're changing something from, 2 to 3 days, that concerns me less than deleting a portion of it. So
I will certainly take it to them, mm-hmm, and if they have any questions, concerns, or whatever, I will bring them to you. Mm-hmm. Write them down and bring them to you. I have no problem with that.
Yeah. I don't think they're going to have big concerns over that. I don't think they want to see the township getting bogged down unnecessarily in litigation.
All right, where are we at?
So we're removing A.
We're striking out A.
Do we need to remove part of the introduction, or is it okay for us to say it shall not supersede D? I don't think there's a problem with saying that we shall not supersede deed restrictions on any property, including subdivisions.
No, that needs to come out.
That needs to come out also?
Yeah.
Just
okay.
Stop it, say.
I would think once you, that's all the change.
Stop. Yeah. Township. Okay. All right. Okay. All right. Going on to B, occupancy.
I know there's always going to be discussion. I think what we'll find is people will be turning family rooms into bedrooms so that they can add more occupancy. But if they have to draw their outline in their bedrooms, then you have that at the inception of the registration. I don't think this is a bad number.
I thought it was a good compromise, too.
I think it's a good compromise. I'm not totally sure that that's still what, I mean, who's going to go into the bedrooms and count how many people are sleeping in the beds? But when Brian said he needs something to be able to fight with, I'm okay. I just, yes.
You're not going to argue about the
third, right. Yeah, and that's, I guess, when I was going through this, I'm like, okay, come on, guys. Really, who's going to do that? But when you said you needed something to be able to stand on, I'm okay with that.
You know, if I build a house that has 3 bedrooms, and you've got 15 or 20 people sleeping overnight, okay, then you've got a violation.
Mm-hmm.
You got a party. What you got?
Glenn's disappointed he wasn't invited.
Actually, I think, I was a little concerned about the occupancy numbers as well. But again, I think it's, again, there so that when we have
a problem,
outrageous violation, mm-hmm, that we have something to hang our hats on. Because we've all seen these rentals, and it makes a lot of sense where, you have a bedroom that has the double bed on the bottom, mm-hmm, the single bed on the top, and then a bunk bed over on this side. So that's clearly more than you're looking at here. But on total, on average, this gives us something where if we have 20 people in a 2-bedroom home, and I think the road commissioner who mentioned that, he's kind of got that going on, if I remember, if that was his situation. I think it was a very small house.
Oh, right, that there are 20 people staying in a 1-bedroom
right,
holding tank.
Yep.
Building.
Okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay, C, designation of local agent, if I have concern with that.
Nope.
Okay, D, information that they need to keep it up to date.
Only that I think that we need to reinforce here that the license holder bears the responsibility to notify planning and zoning of any changes.
The license holder bears the responsibility.
I can't write that.
It's recorded.
All right. Parking.
Can you regulate parking?
I was going to say, yeah.
Can you regulate the parking? Well, tell somebody they can't park on the public road or on the edge?
You're requiring them to park on the property. You also can regulate where you park on a public highway. Under the Constitution, the township has concurrent jurisdiction and has the ability to reasonable control of its public roads. Okay, so yes, you do have that legal authority.
Okay, but it says parked in driveway, not on property. I think there's a difference.
Mm-hmm.
So I had an issue with in the driveway because...
No, you could basically just be parked on the property.
Yeah, I guess that's... Because if your driveway is one car length long and you have a boat, how are you going to do that?
The problem that becomes that, and I can just say this, you know, the comment is...
They're all over the grass, all over, everywhere parked.
I mean, cars should be parked appropriately if they have a home. Why would you have a home that sleeps 20 and room for one car? I mean, it should be in proportion, you know.
Differentiate who stays and who's a guest. I mean, it's like...
Are you going to be counting cars at 2 in the morning?
Yeah.
Well, no, you're not.
Well, again, none of this is specific that we're counting cars at 2 in the morning or we're looking at trash at 5:01. This is to give us those things to fall back on.
So just as an example, I recently stayed in an Airbnb in North Carolina, and their subdivision said that all cars had to be off of the road at 10 p.m. If you were... And that was neighbor-enforced. I mean, if you were a rental here, you had to be in the yard or in the driveway. You know, that was very similar to the trash thing.
Mm-hmm. As a suggestion, you might want to think about shall be parked in designated parking areas as opposed to a driveway.
I would prefer that. At least that gives you some leeway.
Well, we currently have in our ordinance... It talks about location of off-street parking spaces within a rear yard or a side yard. Off-street parking should not be permitted within a minimum front yard setback unless otherwise provided in this ordinance. Required off-street parking spaces shall consist of a parking strip, parking bay, driveway, garage, or combination thereof, and shall be located on the premises they are intended to serve.
Why don't we say this? Shall be parked on the short-term rental property in compliance with all applicable requirements of the East Bay Township zoning ordinance.
Sure. I can't write that fast, Brian.
Ann's got it. Ann's got it.
Yeah, because although there's a lot of toys, if somebody lived there, they might have their
the same
boat
right.
Too.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to go with something to the effect that shall be parked on the short-term rental property in compliance with the East Bay Township zoning ordinance.
Exactly.
Okay.
Then when... Oh, you're moving on to the waste and recycling.
So, did you have another question on parking?
No, I didn't. Is everyone else fine with the parking? I thought
you
were done there. So I was just going
to... No, I've added the waste and recycling.
Okay. I think we should get rid of the hours of 5 a.m. to 9 a.m. on scheduled collection days. I think the important part is that the owner of the property have waste collection. And I'm not talking about them doing the waste collection. I'm talking about them contracting with the company.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are some short-term rentals in other states we've been at, and when you leave, take your trash with you. Mm-hmm. We don't want to do that because
it ends up in our dumpsters
at our parks. And
well, and then there are holidays or times where the trash companies will say you need to have your receptacle out the night before,
mm-hmm.
or it's the next day. So I agree with taking out the times.
Yeah. So could we just, yeah.
Well, go ahead, Don.
No.
I was just going to say, because I had the same thing wrote down, and I just wondered if when you get the waste/recycling disposal, the next sentence say that they shall have weekly garbage pickup, and then the rest, and then take out the times. Because it doesn't say that they have to have it. It's insinuating, but it doesn't say they must.
Okay.
That was my take on it.
I was just going to, for the purpose of waste recycling containers, waste recycling collection by a, go ahead.
I don't think it's necessary to mandate that they have been. The general rule is, in fact, stated in the first phrase. Occupants shall not leave or allow others to leave trash, rubbish, refuse, or collection within public view. I don't care how often they collect.
Right.
You can't put it in public view. That's the general rule.
Yeah, but dumpster.
A lot of people take it to American Waste.
So the exception then, if you want to put it in public view, it has to be in these recycling containers for the purposes of being collected.
And not commercial dumpsters.
Yeah. Right. So it doesn't matter whether you collect it once a month, every 3 weeks, every 2 weeks, because the general rule is it can't be in public view.
I agree that I don't really necessarily care how often they're collecting it. I still do believe, though, that the property owner should have a contract for trash collection.
But what about those property owners that don't, I mean, if they don't have it used, they're paying for something that's not being used, and they take it to American Waste themselves. I mean, we have residents that do that.
Okay, but the whole thing is, with the point with this, it's just like having rental houses. You mandate they have it, because if you don't, your life will start getting rodents and whatever else around there.
Well, I agree.
If they want to license it, what we're saying is, if you want a license to do this, you will have weekly garbage pickup. And I don't care if they use it once a month, they still pay by the month.
Mm-hmm. But then that's another layer that's going to have to be on the registration, is who is your carrier, what is your contract number. I can see Rubbermaid containers made to hold a weekend's worth of garbage, that then when that rental is done, the property owner, the manager, takes that to American Waste. To me, that is an acceptable way to take care of their trash. Having it sitting in budget bags, that's not in a secured container. That's out in public view.
Rick, you just had your...
Well, I was going to agree with Glenn on the perspective. I would be concerned if people could only have pickup once every 3 or 4 weeks or whatever because of rodents and other issues such as that. Where they get knocked over by a passing vehicle in the garbage room or whatever it might be. I don't know necessarily the best solution, because I agree with Sue that there are some people that take it themselves to American Waste. So I guess this is one where it's going to have to be a kind of a policy decision by the board, but I do have a deep concern about potential rodents gathering at a site that they don't have the garbage picked up often enough, or take it away often enough, or however it's done.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
The American Waste facility, is that available 7 days a week for trash?
If you go to the Holiday one in Acme, you can go to other locations
that won't take garbage.
Okay, that's recycling only, but yep. There is the one at American Waste on Hughes Drive, which may be ending up on Keystone.
Okay, so that one is open 7 days a week?
I believe so.
I think it's open on Sundays.
You don't think so? I don't know. I guess we'd have to investigate that.
So what was your point?
Yeah, exactly.
I was just wondering if it is, if you're flipping your house every Sunday, can you have these containers that you can take straight to American Waste in a 7-day-a-week program?
Okay, well.
Is it a...
I think that we need to just say the occupants shall not leave or allow others to leave trash, rubbish, refuse, or garbage within public view, except in proper waste or recycling containers, period.
Except in proper waste or recycling containers for the purpose of collection. Do you know what I'm saying? Because if you just put in... Exactly.
Okay. I would be all right with that.
Yeah.
Can I put double?
The purpose of disposable. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Collection for disposal.
Yeah. Collection or disposal.
I'm okay.
Not for collection. You don't want to...
Well, right now it currently says for collection.
Yeah.
Recycling collection.
And then leaving a commercial dumpster.
Okay. Believe me, a lot of my calls are, my neighbor's trash has been out there for 3 days. I get that all the time, so we would know about it.
Question. On this, it said you cannot keep it in a public view unless it's in a container.
Mm-hmm.
Correct? Doesn't say you can't throw it in the guy's storage shed there. I know this sounds a little ridiculous, but folks, if you've been in the rental business, I've seen it all.
If it says in a proper waste or recycling container, now granted that proper waste or recycling container could be inside his shed, I suppose.
Well, the shed isn't in public view.
But don't you have a nuisance ordinance that deals with a nuisance that has to do with rodents and things like that? Mm-hmm. You can enforce that through the nuisance ordinance as opposed to...
Wait a second. Who that's going to short-term rental is going to throw the garbage in the back? Because who's ever going to come back?
There's that very pragmatic use end user experience is going to self-eliminate. You like you're going to stay at this house and it's beautiful, but it smells like a sewer.
But then also the property owner rates the person that rents it too. And that will come back to haunt them if they choose to rent at a future time, because they're all looking at the ratings. I mean, we laugh at it, but they're all looking at the ratings.
So basically, the way we're leaving it is they will store it out of sight, and if it is in sight, it's in a recycling or garbage for collection, right?
Collection or disposal.
Okay.
Right, and then they'll leave the part
of it. Right.
Yes,
yeah,
sir.
Four
collection.
Yeah,
all
right. So, moved on. Well, when you say or disposal, I'm going to dispose that in 3 weeks from. But anyway, okay, go ahead.
Advertising.
I don't have a problem with that.
No, I think that's fine. I can remember running a daycare years ago when we had to put our license number in all everything that we had and our literature that we handed out, our ads that we put in the paper, it was there.
Yes, please.
Good. All right, dwelling appearance. Remembering that this is not meant for us to criticize paint jobs.
Your PowerPoint, I thought you got a little off topic with your Holiday Inn comment.
Okay.
I prefer the language in the proposed ordinance much better.
Okay. But what, I mean,
ultimately,
what does that mean? I was going to say, it's pretty subjective.
Yes, and it's intended to be. Because okay. you cannot specify the architectural design of every
right.
structure.
Of
and
every
so,
house.
Again, we're talking about the extreme. If we have something that's totally extreme, you can take a picture of it. You know it when you see it. Here's the judge. This is not the residential character, because here's all the pictures of the whole other houses in mm-hmm. the neighborhood. It sticks out like a sore thumb.
But if it was like that at the time of the application, then that's another story. It's
yeah.
what they would do to change it after they've received that application. Right.
I was going to say, because there's an Igloo house down in the Pine Grove yes. subdivision. And
which has been there forever?
That's not a typical residential...
But it's been there and it was there
right,
before.
But I'm just saying they're...
But that's what it would look like if they, when they did the application.
Right.
They hadn't been changed to racing stripes and neon signs.
Okay, are we going on to safety?
I'm sorry.
All right, safety. Let's start with safety item one about each bedroom having a
fine.
My only question, I just wanted clarification. The way it is written throughout here, if it's a three-bedroom home, you have three smoke detectors, one in each bedroom. You have three smoke detectors outside of each bedroom, that's six. You have, if you have a two-story home, that's two more, so potentially you've got eight smoke detectors, right?
Not necessarily, because those three bedrooms could be covered by the one smoke detector on the exterior.
But is that how it's written? It says it should be outside each bedroom.
And it, yeah, yeah, you could have them all. You could have one that covered all three of them.
And if you
she doesn't like the word each.
Each bedroom doesn't mean each.
Each contiguous bedroom.
Each. It means each one shall have one outside of it. It doesn't mean that they have to be individual ones.
But can it, I just want the clarification.
Well, would you like another word instead of each?
I would say within so many feet. You know, within a proximity of.
Approximal?
What is
building code?
Proximal?
Yeah.
Right.
I understand. I understand.
Is
but
that code or is that wish? Okay. Because I was like.
I can tell you that in my house that I built in 2001, the smoke detector is not inside the bedroom.
Yeah.
It's just outside the bedroom.
Right.
But when I did a remodel in 2011, not touching the bedrooms, right. I did a remodel on the complete other side of the house. Building code required me to put wired smoke detectors in each bedroom and outside the bedroom.
So what I don't want to see us to do tonight is to debate this.
Yeah.
Here, let's talk. Somebody needs to call the construction code office here in the county and find out what are the legal requirements dealing with smoke detectors.
And carbon monoxide detectors.
Right. And I'm not against them.
No.
I just want to make sure that we're clear.
We should basically specify or... Yeah, you can't just say you have to have smoke detectors in compliance with code, because that doesn't tell anybody anything. You got to be able to spell it out, but let's don't talk about what we think is.
Mm-hmm.
Let's call the code office and find out what actually is.
2016, one bedroom, and one outside in a continuous proximity of bedrooms.
And that's the way ours is, too, but I just want to make sure that that is the intent.
Yeah, and double check the carbon monoxide, because I've had furnace people tell me not to put it in the room where the furnace is because
it's
too close. Yeah, so make sure that that's not something we're just making up, because we moved ours because it was always going off.
Question.
Yeah.
We get talking about the safety, and I don't want to jump clear down to P, but maybe this will solve a lot of this. We do. This is treated as a commercial residence, right? Just like a hotel room. Why not have them be inspected by the fire department once a year? If it's commercial,
they won't do it.
We ask them, they will not do it.
Okay.
We specifically asked them, they would.
I guess my concern is, and when we talk about working smoke detectors, how do we know they're working?
Yeah.
You know, if it's inspected, at least you know that the ingress, egress windows work and open. They're not stuck. You know the smoke alarm and all that works when they check it.
Theoretically, because this is an ordinance, the township staff has the legal right to go in to inspect if they want. If they have reasonable belief that the smoke detectors aren't working, they get a complaint, for instance. Okay? You can go in and do consent, get a consent to search. They go push the button or take their little match underneath the smoke detector to see if it's working.
I just need to make
and
post.
It's typically if there is some complaint or problem. I mean, that's...
In that case, it'd probably be a complaint by somebody staying there because...
Right, exactly.
The outside's not going to...
Exactly. But that's how you find these things out.
Okay, since we're going to recheck those portions, what about the... what about number four, where we talk about the property, the street address, and the numbers clearly displayed, so that's...
Go ahead. That's fine.
Aren't four and six the same?
Well...
No. You need inside the house.
The one is inside the house, the other's outside.
Okay. Where you are.
They call the house.
No, where they are, just call them.
If these people grab a phone and call, they don't know what necessarily what the address is.
I got you. So it should be posted. Well, there's not going to necessarily be a landline phone, but there should... When we've stayed at B&Bs, there's a blackboard or a whiteboard that states the address it states the contact numbers and their number and the closest manager. All of those are right there visual. So, I mean, I think it's probably, some of this may be standard with the Airbnbs and the VRBOs.
But if you come from Saginaw and you're running someplace in Traverse City and you're in an emergency and you pick up the phone and you're like, I don't know, I'm in Traverse, you know.
That's exactly the reason why you want that address.
Right.
Inside the building.
Correct. But it doesn't need to be hardware. It can be on one of these boards.
Right. Okay, so I think we don't have any issues with 4, 5, 6.
With number 6, I was just going to ask you, because you might have homes that aren't visible from the street, that the street number for the short-term rentals be both clearly visible, the street number for the short-term rentals shall be attached to the home and be both clearly visible from the street.
Is there a county 911 ordinance that requires certain...
There is.
Why can't we make reference to that?
You can, just like you can make reference to the fire code and the ones above, but you're specifically spelling it out.
I agree that it should be visible from the street, because if somebody's 500 yards off the road, there would be somebody to see the address.
That's what it says.
So you're, but Beth, you're stating you also want added on the home?
Right.
Because on the building?
You want it on the home or the building. So, for example, if they're driving up a shared drive, you know, what happens with emergency services, like, okay, well, which one is, you know, 319? Is it that one or that one?
How many shared drives do we have in East Bay Township? Aren't they not allowed?
There's a ton of them.
Yeah. Yep, and we do have an issue with a lot of homes that aren't identified on the structure. Right. And then if you just say identified on the structure, well, it might not be from the street.
Right.
So this gives it both. Look, we want it from the street and from on the building.
So the street number for the short-term rental shall be clearly visible from the street and attached to the...
Because it could be on the building and visible.
The street number for the short-term rental shall be both attached to the home and clearly visible from the street.
Yeah.
It can be, but right. if it's not both, then it has to be two. Okay, thank you.
Before we go on today, procedural question. When we were talking about wrapping up around 8, was that including any comments from the public?
Hey, come on, we're getting close. Let's go.
Keep going.
All right. Going on to Jay, outdoor lighting.
I think we're all fine with that, right? Okay.
All right. What about, septic and holding tanks? I'm sure there will be no comments on that.
In my opinion, that needs to be stricken. If it becomes a stickler, if we're compromising, I want it gone.
Yeah, until it's mandated township-wide, I mean, I don't think it's reasonable to mandate it on just short-term rentals. Exactly.
And that subjectiveness, what are you looking for? I think it should be gone.
Well, and I think we had recommended back when we first, when they changed the some of the requirements for the septic stuff, didn't they say 4 years? I mean, we sent out a postcard and everything asking people to voluntarily do it every 4 years.
No, there's no requirement on when to get it pumped.
Right.
Most people are... They were saying everybody, when they built the thing, they based it on how many tanks get pumped, how often. They based it on 4 or 5 years, and it's more like 10 years that people get it pumped.
Right.
I
don't know about the go ahead, Brian.
Ultimately, whether you keep K in or out is a policy choice, okay? But I want to make sure you understand what the law is, okay? Case law very clearly says that when a township or a municipality perceives a problem that you want to address, You are not required to address the problem in its entirety. You can bite off bits and pieces of the problem to correct. And so even though holding tanks and well and septics are only applicable to short-term rentals, that is legally allowed, if you will. And so it comes down to purely a policy choice whether you want to include it or whether you don't.
There's two components to this, really. There is whether it's in working condition, and then there's the inspection every 3 years. So, I mean, this is a commercial use that you're doing, and I think that, you know, at least for getting the license or the registration, it makes sense to make sure that they have a functioning system from the get-go.
Again,
so
I think that's going to be somewhat self-regulatory if people have trouble with the toilets.
Yeah, the people aren't
going to
rent it.
They're going to be flushed out.
Yeah, if it
you're right.
Flushed, you can have, can't you have issues with it and not it not be showing in the home?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's going in the lake.
Right.
Is there, but beyond that, if a house on the lake does that, what is the recourse for a resident? If the leeches into the lake,
there
what
isn't
do we
one.
Do then?
There
nothing?
Isn't one.
Not a health department.
And that's why this is a stepping stone.
Right.
But like Brian said, just because you can't, we're not necessarily doing it for the resident, doesn't mean we can't do it for this. And this is a commercial entity that they're operating.
So do we require that with all the other commercial entities residing in East Bay Township?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I would think you.
Hook up the water and sewer unless they're outside the growth boundary.
Yeah.
Not really. When I had a group daycare home, we are within the growth boundary, but there was no water or sewer to be had. But I did not need to have a sewer or a septic or well inspection.
Daycare home to be a commercial use, considered a use that has to be allowed by right in a residential district. If it was a daycare center, I would agree with you, unless you were more than 12.
It was 12.
Let's think about this. With the daycare, though, half of them aren't using the septic system anyway.
Not necessarily.
Well, yeah. Two are.
But back to K.
Three and under are not.
Back to K.
There's a lot of semantics.
And this is a commercial use where you might have 20 people using the home.
I would feel better if we at least had 20 people apply. Now, we want to require them, not to require them to show every 3 years. That's a policy decision. I just feel to get our head wrapped around this issue, it might be nice to at least require proof that it's functioning when they apply.
You said an issue. Is there an issue?
There is an issue. I mean, we've got Mitchell Creek that is on.
I know that that's what it is. How do you know it's not something farther upstream? Can't prove it.
Well, we are talking about doing a study on Mitchell Creek, yes. And currently we can't prove it, although
you can.
A fair number
survive.
Of people have one of the possible causes. But
who's going to check it? Who's going to say that the water is good or the well works great? Who's going to say, who's going to come and inspect?
And what are they inspecting for? Who's going to determine that?
Is it a little bit like, having them establish that it's a functioning septic system from the beginning, you know, is one thing.
So what's that?
That's okay. I'm just going to say, a lot of it is, you're saying, like, who's inspecting that? Well, that I guess they would show proof of. But, you know, with the additional 3 years, who's checking that again? It's the language in here that gives us the ability if we have an issue, correct? So if we end up with that one of these houses are one of the houses they call us on from the health department, and there's little, you know, that we can do, sometimes it's in the most extreme cases. At least with this, we could take care of those cases that are marginal.
Question. Wouldn't the health department be the one responsible for that? If somebody called and said, or rented it and said, well, the septic system isn't working, that would be the health department that would go out there, and they're the ones that's already got the ability to require them to do something.
Well, we've had calls on long-term rentals saying that there's a problem with their septic, and I'm like, you need to call the health department.
Yep.
That's not anything we can regulate. We don't have any...
If we're going to look at something, I guess my thought would be, if we're going to, I believe, you know, you probably got dry wells out there, which you're not even allowed anymore. If we're going to look at something, have it inspected to find out if it's an adequate system. But as far as going back every 3 years, that's just a waste of money as far as I'm concerned.
I personally like having them establish that it's a working system.
But who's establishing that, and how are you proving it?
Health department.
Or you'd have a licensed septic inspector.
But our last meeting, we had a licensed inspector stand up and say that, no, there is no... It's too general. It's not, what do you want to do? Just open up, yep, there is one. I don't think we want to get into those. I think better document without it.
My concern with, if we're going to look at something, look to find out if they got a 55-gallon drum for a dry well, or if they got a dry well, or if they got a system. That would be, but as far as going back and inspecting it, I think that's just basically a waste of money.
All right, well, I guess.
Good, Brian.
If you're going to have this kind of a thing, you can always say that it has to be in compliance with the sanitary codes. So that at least there's some standard by which you're judging the inspection.
And we're not having an inspection done repetitively without it meeting the code. They just are saying, yes, by signing this, I am saying under penalty of law that it meets the sanitary code. Is that what you mean, Brian?
You gotta have some standards. You just can't inspect for the purposes of inspection, okay? Because you have no standards to judge that inspection against. And so, what people have to comply with when you're dealing with a sanitary system is the sanitary code, okay? And you're not going to be able to get into every minutia of what the sanitary code requires, but yet you have a standard that says, you know, that of what you have to meet. If you're leaching into the lake, clearly that's not in compliance with the sanitary code.
Right.
Okay.
But should that be the township's responsibility or the health department that issues septic permits?
It can be both, either or both.
I
think when it's established for any occupancy, they have to have the health department sign off and allow it, right?
Before you get occupancy permit, you're exactly right.
But a lot of townships, don't they require that at a change in ownership that they get a new...
We had someone call the other day to say, I heard you guys have a point of sale that you have to have your septic system inspected. I said, we do not have a point of sale.
I think what you're talking about, I think there is something in the health department, in a change of use, it has to be inspected.
Well, I just had a friend sell his house on Bass Lake, and he had to have an inspection before he on a septic system.
It's Long Lake Township, and they have something.
Long Lake Township.
They have one, but it is very difficult to enforce because they don't have the standards. They haven't written it out like Brian's talked about, from what I have been told by those that are there.
Well, I would like to make sure when they begin, then they are licensed to operate something that is a commercial entity, and they are, having revenue from that they have a proper, if they're on a septic system, that they have a properly functioning septic system. Whether it's inspected after that, I'm fine with leaving that out, but at least at the point in time when they...
I agree with that. I agree that this isn't as specific enough as it needs to be, but I agree that there needs to be an inspection on the septic system and the water system as well. And what that is, I can't tell you. That's not my expertise.
Yeah.
I know that Butch could tell you a whole lot more than I could very easily.
And he planned to be here, but he had a number of other things he had to do today.
But my biggest concern is those systems that are the 55-gallon, that are leaching right into the lake, that are being used. And I've said this before, I don't care how many people are sleeping there. I'm more concerned about how many people are flushing the toilet.
And that's happening right now.
Right.
Without being a short-term rental.
And that's happening out there, and this is a stepping stone that we as the township can do to protect our waters.
I don't think that's our game right now. I don't think that that is, to me, I would prefer it's gone for us to continue on.
Those lakes, the small, particularly when we're talking the lakes area, the small lakes, those are, the health of those lakes are incredibly important. It's the whole reason
that
people want to come there and visit there. And so I think the protection of them is a priority. Mm-hmm. And again, I go back to the commercial use. And, you know, if they want to do a commercial use, that's fine. You know, if they want to live in that house, then we're not requiring that. But if they want to own and operate it for the purpose of creating a profit, then they need to make sure that it's a operating system.
I think it was said maybe 3 or 4 years ago that maybe we needed to focus on trying to find a sanitary system around the lakes, that's where we should be focusing our efforts as a board, is to try to find out how to make that happen.
I would support that effort. Totally.
But this is completely not the document that needs to hang on it. It needs to be all of it,
there,
regardless of what the use of the building is.
Problem is you're talking about a tremendously different investment there.
Well, of course you are.
Versus having this done versus, you know, putting in a sanitary system around an intricate amount of lakes.
I think we've got a part right now would be a good part to stop and make a new meeting, because we're not going to come to any conclusion on this section to move forward.
Are there any other major, we are pretty close to the end, are there any other major sections where people have noticed?
Can I just ask, I mean, rather than if we're going to stop, fine, but what do we need to research or find out in order to figure this out? Because right now we're not giving staff any indication of what to do with it.
With respect to the septic systems?
Yeah. Because I personally would like to know. I have no idea what the sanitation thing says.
I guess what I would ask that somebody check with the health department and find out when you got to change your use, if they do not have to be okayed for their septic system or have to be checked by the health department.
Okay, Brian?
Well, I'm on the same thing. It's like, can we have somebody from the health department come to our meeting and talk to us about it?
Sure. So, as Rick and Brian know, you can kind of hear the comments here. We can come up with maybe a couple options for the township board to consider. All right?
I have a couple things. Section 12.
Mm-hmm.
Most of our ordinances are 8, 15, or 30 days for an effective date. This ordinance shall become effective the day following its publication in a newspaper of general.
Generally, a general law township can have a penalty provision like this one does is 30 days. And so what triggered in my mind is there may be a separate rule for a charter township, and that's why I want to double check and make notes to check on that.
Perfect. Because it's not consistent with the other document further back. Because it says 8 days effective.
That's specifically under the zoning enablement.
Okay.
That one I know is right.
Right, so but they're in conflict with each other, so I appreciate you looking that through that.
You understand. Okay. Zoning amendment is covered specifically by the zoning enablement, okay, which that 8 days is in fact correct.
Mm-hmm.
I just need to double check whether there's a special effective date for a charter township as opposed to a general law township.
Okay. Okay, Glenn?
Okay, just a question. Rather than having another meeting, if anybody else has got anything with the last of this, and then we just, the only thing we got,
yeah,
we're waiting on.
Do you have anything?
I don't have anything else.
Okay, Sue, was that the end of your
news? No. Okay, section 7, with the duty to remedy violations, at the section where it says, upon receiving notice of the violation, the license holder and or local agents shall ensure that violation is remedied within 2 hours. I think we need to discuss that timeline better. Under 8, B and C, I would like them gone or something more.
We can't.
Well, there needs to be something different, I think. I would like more discussion on those.
If I can just briefly, okay? When someone has this kind of a license, the Constitution recognizes that as a property interest, Okay? And so if you're going to revoke that through an administrative process, you have to provide due process.
Okay.
Due process requires notice and an opportunity for a hearing. Okay? That's why B is the service of a notice within 21 days, and C is the actual hearing.
So is that where the discussion was going to come in, where who is going to be that hearing board?
Yes. Is that what?
Yeah, that's the, I had two items that of my things, the two big things left were, one was that was the hearing board, and I wanted to see if that could be something alternate to the township board. I don't really think we want to necessarily do that.
Rick is right. Under the Zoning Enabling Act, the ZBA, and the Planning Commission, under the Planning Commission Act, this is inapplicable. But you have the legal ability through this ordinance to assign the appeal hearing or the revocation hearing to wherever body you want. It can be the ZBA, it could be the Planning Commission, or it could be a body that you create. Okay? And so you're not limited to just the township board. I often have an appeal procedure for land division appeals. That typically goes to the ZBA because they're used to dealing with appeals.
Okay. Okay. One of the things when I was talking to Rick, I thought if we have a three-member board, we could easily put, I envision something like, a retired police officer, or maybe someone who has worked in water, sewer, or a sanitarium or something like that, a realtor.
Yeah. It doesn't even have to be a public body. You can, this is part of the due process requirement. You have to have a fair and impartial decision maker. It could be the Planning Commission, it could be the ZBA, it could be the Township Board, or you could create a position called a hearings officer and have one individual hear this particular appeal. Okay? It depends on how concentrated do you want to have this power. If you don't, do you want one person to make the decision, or do you want more than one person as a body, okay, to make that decision? That's a policy choice. Okay.
Thank you for the clarification.
The other area that I had listed, besides that township board hearing, was the loophole with the suspension.
That
kind of needs
seems
to be dealt
cumbersome
with.
Mm-hmm. And
as painful as you want to make it to them, that is.
Yeah.
It's not feasible for you to ensure that and not open up for litigation of some kind later.
Go ahead, Brian.
Your ordinance does not specify a time period for when rentals can occur. So your short-term rentals can, by definition, occur 12 months out of the year. Okay? Mm-hmm. The purpose of the suspension issue is to make the maximum impact on the owner of the property, okay? It's basically the best incentive to ensure compliance, okay? And so the language that you have here does that. It makes them pay the price during the peak issues, all right? So that's the purpose. It's not to stop the rentals, but it's to maximize the hurt. Okay.
So why do a suspension instead of offering the option of a fine instead? Because
you're limited by law that fines and costs will be like $500, and that could just be a cost. So you want to be able to make sure that the actual suspension is in the peak periods where people can get the most money, okay, or the higher rates.
So don't we have to do that for everyone, though? Everyone's suspension will have to occur during what we deem to be peak rates.
That
is what it will have to be.
That's what's already there. Your already requires it.
Okay. But then the subjective part becomes, again, if someone has levied a violation in August, and their peak times, by however it's determined, is May to September, but they could still be renting October through
amount of calendar days rather than a continuous
right
Right? The purpose of dissension is not to limit the rental period, but to specify the time period, okay, of that suspension.
See, and I guess I would think, you know, just because we think at the lake it might be May to September, but I mean, I've stayed at a lake site to go skiing at the ski hill in the neighboring, you know. So that's the peak.
You're making the assumption under this language that the most economic hurt, if you will, is between May through September.
Right. Well, that's
because
that's what
it says.
That
may or may not be true, depending on snowmobile traffic
right.
and skiing.
I guess I just have a hard time with, I think, the administration of doing just May through September and skipping and all of that.
Isn't that the purpose right, though?
That would be hard to do.
But again, that's an assumption that you're making, that the peak economic mm-hmm. period for these rentals and the peak impact on the neighborhood, okay? So if you want to sanction the property owner, also give relief, if you will, to the adjacent property owners, that's the reason for the May through September time period. But if you are challenging that assumption, then in fact, that period of time, that whole concept is basically not applicable.
I just, Brian, I just have a question. The way that it's written, if somebody has is suspended in the August time frame, so it would be September, and then their next 2 months would then be the next May and June, correct?
Yes.
Okay. During that time from October to April, are they suspended that entire time, or they are allowed to rent
so
through that time?
They're able to continue
okay.
their...
Okay, because that's why I read it, that they're allowed to rent, and I just wanted to make sure that was the intent.
The intent.
Okay.
Again, you're trying to maximize...
Yep.
I just think it's a nightmare.
I have one maybe off this a little bit while Brian is here. I have a question that may be handled, I think, with such a simple answer. Maybe not. For property owners that are not in a subdivision, but they're in close proximity, or for a subdivision that does not have a homeowners association restriction, can those be formed now? How does that happen for those people that fall within those parameters?
Let's take what I call a flat. You can call it subdivision. Call it ABC flat. An ABC flat may have 50 lots. Okay? And right now, the ABC plat does not have any deed restrictions. It does not have any homeowners associations. And so now the question you pose is, can they now, after this plat has been developed, create deed restrictions and a homeowners association? The answer to your question, I think, is yes.
Mm-hmm.
But it would take the agreement or the approval of those lots within the development or within the plat that would then agree to subject their property to those deed restrictions. Is it technically possible? Yes. Is it likely? The answer, I think, is no. Because why would a property owner voluntarily assume to impose property restrictions? But they could. And you may not get the bad actor, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
When it's got the short-term rental,
they're not going to sign. My reason for asking this question was because of the very specific comments we had at the last meeting. The property owners in that that section, particular section that is at the base of East Bay, they are not in a subdivision. I'm going to guess they don't have a homeowners association because they're not a subdivision or a deeded part. But could they, as a joint effort, create that?
Sure. And you don't even have to be part of a flat. You can have a bunch of meets and bounds parcels, okay? If they want to voluntarily join together to create some kind of an association and to put some kind of a deed restriction. A typical example for that might be a bunch of meets and bounds parcels that adjoin a private road. so they want to create an association for road maintenance, snow plowing. That's always theoretically possible.
Okay. Thank you.
What question extension of that? Let's say that these are all platted lots. Okay, let's say you got five lots contiguous, different owners, but they're contiguous. Then you got a lot that that person wants to have short-term rental. And then you got another five or six lots down that do not want it. You can do as many lots together within this, and you can leave one lot out and allow. You don't have to have 100%. All you got to have is 100% of the ones that want it.
The ones that want it.
Okay.
That's after the fact.
Yep.
Generally, deed restrictions are created by the developer who owns all of the lots mm-hmm. in the development, and those deed restrictions are placed on those lots prior to sales to of the individual lots. That's typically how it goes.
But it is possible.
Theoretically possible, but not
okay. Thank you.
So I think that our attorney and planning and zoning have no kind of some things to go back through and clarify and get further information or to change. We'll go ahead and take public comment. It'll be at the end of this agenda item, but we have public comment very next on the agenda. So we'll hear public comment right now from anybody who would like to address the board. Feel free to step up to the podium and introduce yourself and offer your comments.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jonathan Pack. Do I need to state my address?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, 824 Webster Street, Traverse City, Michigan. So one thing I just from hearing the discussion again, one thing that I wanted to point out is that the statistics from Airbnb came out for the state of Michigan. For the 2017, which was their beginning year, very first year, they produced $48 million in revenue income for their hosts. For Traverse City, we were the number two on that list, and I think they note Traverse City based on zip codes. So whatever's in our zip code, that was $4.3 million in host income. I operate the Cherry Tree Inn and Suites. That is almost 50% more income than my hotel produces, and I sell 20,000 room nights a year. I'm one of the highest occupied hotels in the area. I do a 73% occupancy. I blow away star reports. So I'm just saying that this is just the tip of the iceberg with your short-term issues that you're going to have. So I think right now you're looking at ordinance. I think you have the wrong focus. You're problem solving regarding what the ordinance will fit, and I think the real problem is how is it going to affect our communities long term. And I don't think I think you guys are very smart. You're very deliberately going through this, and you have great planners who are trying to get this. But I think the focus is wrong. I really do. I think it's going to hurt our communities. And I know I'm a hotel operator. I'm not going to assume that you're thinking anything bad because I have an invested interest. I really don't. I own a home right downtown Traverse City, so I guess that's where my invested interest is I worry about my own street. One thing that really struck me as well is that you were talking about the commercial lighting aspect of this. We've discussed in past meetings that this is, you know, these are residential homes in residential areas, but you're creating commercial codes for this. Which really strikes me because if I'm a private homeowner right next to a short-term rental, I could do lighting essentially that goes right up to the sky and do whatever I wanted. But now you're requiring commercially. I went through this with building the hotel pool at Cherry Tree. Everything has to be down. We need to reduce the amount of light waste, and I understand that. But it's really striking to me that these are residential areas, and you're requiring commercial code for them. So that's really concerning to me. You know, I wish you the best of luck. I know you're kind of the final steps, and you want to be done with it, I think. But I just want to get my voice of concern on there. But I think the focus is wrong. I think you can read all the statistics about short-term rentals. You can read about towns in Colorado, and when we talk about employment, workforce, housing. You know. it's going to have an effect, you know, as an investor, as I grow my income and I'm trying to figure out ways where I can grow and pay for my kids' college tuition, I'll be looking at homes and that I can rent out because I know how to manage a property. I know how to manage guests. I know how to communicate with them. I'll be looking for a home. And so now I'm buying a home that I'm managing short-term rental, and now all of a sudden that home, I'm paying higher. I'm trying to get a higher price for that home. I probably bought higher, but I know how to get the income off of it. And now a person who's going to buy that home doesn't have a, was planning to do an income on it. They're living out further and then further and then further because all the home prices where they're desirable on lakes, closer to the lakes, wherever it may be, they're going to go up. And I just really believe that's going to be. And, you know, assumptions I'm based on, I know you were saying assumptions based on when it will hurt them the most. There are the statistical, from Star Reports, Smith Travel Research, worldwide leader in research for occupancy, ADR, RevPAR for hotel and travel industry, they can absolutely tell you without a doubt when it will be the most harmful to these short-term rentals. So just want to add that on a side note. You can get absolute clear data on that. So thank you so much.
Before you leave, I have one question. You said you think this will hurt the community because it will open it up to short-term rentals, causing people to have to move further out for affordable housing, or because why is it you think it will hurt the community? I didn't pick up on that.
No, that's okay. So two reasons. One, it will hurt the community because rising home prices in the area, you're going to have forcing people to go out more. So, you know, I grew up where the mall was a Buffalo Farm, and the Great Wolf Lodge was a Buffalo Farm, and now, you know, we're continuing to expand. So now you're going to have people who, they won't be able to find a home, or they're going to have to try and do new build. And I don't know if you guys have looked up at the cost of new building, but that's still also very expensive. So I think it's going to hurt your community. We're going to have stale environments. My own street, like I think I mentioned last time, changing out plants, changing out flowers, knowing who to call when you want someone to check on your house. If your neighborhood is all of a sudden switched over to short-term rentals, and you go to try and call your neighbor, like, well, I don't live on site. It's short-term rental people, and I'll try and get a hold of them, but they're probably out in the lakes or something like that. So it's really going to, I feel it's going to hurt the community. And there's clear, you can look up, you guys can look it up. There's a great example of the Colorado town that went to short-term rentals and, I mean, essentially decimated the town. They can't find workforce housing. So they have all these great businesses, all these people coming in for short-term rentals, but they have no employees because they can't afford the housing. So it's a serious issue. So so thank you very much for listening. Have a good evening.
Thank you. Thanks. Next. Go ahead, and we'll keep it coming right up so the next person can go ahead right behind you.
My name is Nicole Hewlett. My address is 1920 South Quilt Court, but I also own a condominium at the Beach Condominiums, which is 1995 U.S. 31 North.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to make sure, and then I'm a condominium manager for vacation rentals, and then I'm also a real estate agent. So I have all those little hats that I wear. One thing I want to make sure is that the Beach Condominiums is an investment property. It's a condo complex. I want to make sure that they are not going to be charged a fee to be given a permit to rent, and same as Peninsula Bay Condominiums, because they're already buying it as an investment mm-hmm. property, and that's their intent. And so to be charged that and then police, that seems odd. So I just want to make sure. I have a lot of people asking me that, so I wanted to clarify that. And then the second thing with real estate is I just want to, for a real estate's point of view, that's a hard one to describe, but people want to buy, and when they want to purchase, they'll ask, is this a vacation rental available property or is it not? And it's hard for us to answer that question now with all this going on. And there's concern about litigation if you say yes it is or no it's not. So if somebody purchases something thinking it can be a vacation rental, and then it can't be, the lawsuits that are coming into play there is a concern of mine, and how to educate the real estate agents to make sure that they're aware, and then the township people to make sure that the real estate agents are aware, so that there isn't a conflict in litigation that goes into a huge area there as well. And then on the end note, the concern that I have about hurting people with the income where it hurts them the most, and saying they can't rent during the peak season, to your point. If somebody makes a mistake in the township level, which could happen, you know, you only have so many people policing this. And if they pull a permit and don't allow somebody to rent and they miss their season, and then they can prove they've lost $50,000, $100,000 in income, and they litigate and sue, who do they sue and who pays for that? That's a concern. So those are my points.
Thank you.
My name is Paul Gonzalez. I live at 709 Munson Avenue. I'd like the board to reconsider Section 2, which passed without question about the 30 days, the definition. Because you talk about it's rented less than 30 days. That means that there's virtually no minimum. So biggest problems that we have encountered are mostly the folks who are there for the crazy weekends that they have for the bridal parties, the frat parties, things of that nature. They're there for, you know, a day. They have been there for 2 days. Usually it's a weekend. But, you know, usually the bus comes up and off they go out to all the wineries and have a good time. So, you know, at least put some minimum floor underneath. I believe that the board or the planning board or the planners are willing to go to like 3 day minimum. You know, I personally think would be a 5 day minimum, because the difference between the families that come that are there for at least, you know, 5 days and the folks that are there to party hard for the 2 days or the 3 days or the long weekend and what have you is majorly different. It's majorly different. There had been a comment at a meeting or two about the nuisance factor that's not built in here. So how do we handle the nuisance factor? How do the residents, how do the neighbors handle and have any hope of being able to control on the nuisance factor, which turns around to the fact of penalties? The only thing that's going to make sense is when you have a penalty and it has some teeth in it. Unless you have teeth in the penalty, people are going to say it's just a cost of doing business. If it's a $500 penalty, so what? These folks are renting these places at $5,000 a week. It's not going to affect them that much. I think that the fees should be substantial enough to make it worthwhile to have a business where you're renting your home. So the last item, too, is in the discussion around, and this does not affect me, but it does in a way, I couldn't see how we could not argue about doing something to protect our water. That is our biggest resource in this area, is our water. And if we have some type of a system which is allowing the leaching of anything into the water system, eventually we're all going to lose. It's not going to be a fact of being an attractive place. It's not. In fact, when we're trying to change this into the term of the beach area, you know, welcome to the beach area, well, welcome to the beach area, but be careful where you walk. So anyway, I just want you to at least consider particularly Section 2 and putting some floor under the minimum as far as what the rentals would be. Thank you.
And if we have anybody after this lady, then if they can just come on up over there, then we can roll right through.
Hi, I'm Teresa Woods. I own Visit Up North Vacation Rentals. And I've been here to several of the meetings as this has been going on. And I do think that this is in the right direction to try to alleviate some issues because it is the bad players that we're putting this in effect for at all. A lot of these things that you have in this license, we already have in our stuff. We even have a thing that says that they have to have their system pumped within the last 5 years before they can come on our program. Mm-hmm. That being said, the holding tanks and the septics, it is very apparent when they go bad to us because the renters call call us immediately. You know, all of the holding tanks have got alarms on them. They get pumped way more than once a year. Mine at home, because I live on the river, I have to pump anywhere from 3 to 6 weeks, depending on if I have my 4th of July party at my house and that kind of thing. I guess I just wanted to do a couple of housekeeping items, because they were talking about sales tax collected. I think it's really great that that's in there, but we've been collecting sales tax as a company for since the 80s. I mean, it's just something that you're supposed to do. A lot of onesie-twosie owners do not do it, and that's why they went after Airbnb, because that's where the onesie-twosie people are, and they were selecting not to come to property management companies because then they don't get 1099, and they don't have to pay sales tax, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's good to put that in there as another avenue. As far as people only coming up to party, I think that that's a very minute group. I do believe that our area, because of the fact of all the breweries and wineries and things like that, we have had more problems with it than we did 10 years ago, let's say. But I think that's more of our area problem than it is just short-term rentals, because I think it's gotten a little crazy. The other thing that... I know that the court in Michigan did say that vacation rentals is a commercial use. Right now there's something going through that they're looking at that would take it out from being a commercial use. It wouldn't be if it gets passed in the state, in the Senate, and the House. It seems to me that, and I understand somebody being here from the hotel, I know Jonathan very well, and their group is really fighting because of the Airbnb situation. We have been good players all along, and, you know, if we could say that we didn't want Airbnb, we would say that as well. But I think that it's just the thought process of the whole entire area becoming one vacation rental property is just never going to happen, because people buy thinking they're going to retire up here, hold it for so many years, the price of the property goes up, they sell. I mean, we have a couple of owners that we've had since the 80s or the 90s, but most of them switch over within 5 years. Some of them go to another person that's going to do vacation rental, but a lot of them also go to people that do full-time, you know, living there. But it's constantly cyclical. The second home market, if you do put a lot of restrictions, it will make the property value go down in that area. I mean, it just happens. We had one house that was out in Northport years ago that the owner put a restriction on it that they would not to sell anybody if they were going to rent it more than 2 weeks in a row. That house sat on the market for a couple of years and did not sell, as every other house around it did sell. So I just, you know, with the real estate, yes, the property values are going up in our area. For most of us, that's a really good thing. As far as housing, I mean, I need more employees too. But at the same point, when I grew up, we lived at Sugarloaf. We couldn't afford to live in Leland, you know. So I think it's just a natural progression, and there's not a whole lot of low-income housing that is going for vacation rentals. So I guess that's it.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Nancy Gonzalez. I live at 709 Munson Avenue, and I've become pen pals with the board. I just have a question. I just wondered if there was any future more commercial activities that you're going to allow in residential areas. I'm just curious if that's in the works. And let me just give you a scenario that I think is similar to what's gone on. Let's say I like to bake. I bake lots of cookies, lots of whatever. I give them to my friends. My friends give them to their friends. They take them into work. All of a sudden, everybody wants to buy my cookies. So I, for years, quietly run a bakery out of my house. And things are cool until all of a sudden I have an issue with one of my neighbors, and they complain to the township. Does the township then rezone where I live to allow that? Better yet, do they rezone the entire township so that everybody can do that out of their house? Because I think that is similar to what happened here. I think it's just years of not enforcing the zoning that we had. I think you need to be very careful in letting this genie out of the bottle, because once it's out, it's not going back in. And if you open this up to all residential areas in East Bay Township, I agree with the guy from Cherry Tree. I think it's going to destroy our township. So I think you better think long and hard. I'm opposed to any short-term rentals. I know that I mentioned in my letter that I felt I had a solution, that the majority of the proponents were from the Lakes area, and I thought that perhaps we could just apply it to the Lakes area. There was the section, I think it was 209, that actually applied to the zoning. It said all residential, and I guess I don't understand why we can't just say Lakes area instead of all residential areas and just reword that, but I'm not a lawyer. But I just really want you to look really long and really hard. And we're in a strip on Munson Avenue where we don't have a neighborhood association. Can we form one? Sure. Will it include those houses there right now are the problem? No, it will not. That will not solve our problem. So I just wanted to come up and just once again say, please, think about it. Don't throw us under the bus. Otherwise, I'm going to be on a first-name basis with the township police. Thank you.
We might be near the end because I think I'm the last person that hasn't spoken.
You are.
My name is Mary Wadzie, and I live at 3263 Prouty Road. And I just wanted to say I'm really pleased with the deliberation and the care that you're giving to me as a citizen. Of being able to undertake this particular topic. I've spent some time also with the Planning Commission and seen how much time they've spent, a ton of time, and really put in the effort as well as your staff. It's amazing. I've also attended some other townships, and they have not given it the same thoughtfulness. And so I appreciate that. I just wanted to thank you all for doing that just as a citizen. I also wanted to just recall, since I've been up here a long time and I used to come up here as a kid, I've seen the area change over the last, okay, so I'm old, a long time. And, you know, where the state park is at the end of 3 Mile, there used to be a house right there because you could shine your lights in there, and they moved that so that the state park could be there. And then right near that, the tribe bought that motel, and that motel's gone now, but it's a lovely open space. And Acme has taken down some houses and some commercial development along their waterfront, and now it's changed. And when I first came up here, when you come up to the lakes and the bayfront, it was either a hotel or a motel, more likely, or it was vacation homes. Residents came in and displaced the vacation homes. They tore down the little cottages, the mom-and-pop cottages that they stayed in part of the time and rented out part of the time, and it's now become commercial, where the cherry tree in was used to be house. But I think that in a way, it's like when you move next door to the pig farm and then you start complaining about the pig farm smelling. People moved in and knew it was a vacation area, and they changed it, and now they don't want it to have any component of what it used to have. And so I appreciate you being mindful that change happens, and maybe right now it's the smaller little guys that may be challenging the hotels, and maybe that's a part of capitalism and commerce and changing. Things are changing. But to forget and to abandon the little vacation homes, I think, would be a disservice to the community over how many years it's been here. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. I want to, first of all, I want to thank the public who is here on a really wonderful night out. I know that is a lot of dedication, and we do appreciate hearing your thoughts on the process that we're going through. I really want to thank staff and council and the Planning Commission for the process that they've gone through. It has been long and deliberate, and We're very appreciative of the work there. And I want to thank you guys for bringing your thoughts and ideas here and sharing them and realizing that we're trying to look for something that kind of fits with all different opinions and all different situations. So with that, let's all have a safe drive home. Be careful. And if there's no objections, the meeting's adjourned. Have a good evening.
I gotta be.